that you formally have greeted you, but formally good morning. And welcome the delegation from NRF. I think we are supposed to be presenting the Astra plan today. A house full this morning, and so there may be people who do not know one another, and therefore I would start by introducing ourselves to one another. Starting from my desk, myself, I'm Ngabani, I'm the Chair of Science and Technology. And I've got Patience Isaac here, who is my committee secretary. And then I've got Rene Moreno Osborne there, who is a researcher. And I've got Sidwell here, who is the assistant committee secretary. And that's my office here. And I will allow my members to then introduce themselves so that you can hear their nice voices.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Janita Klopper-Glazer, a member of the Sports Science Committee.
Morning, everybody. I'm Sona Blighty, member of the Portfolio Committee Science and Technology.
I am Brenda, member of the Portfolio Committee Science and Technology.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Bobby Mochuni, member of the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology.
Chair, and all of the members, good morning. I am Nkosi Mwela Mankonyana, employee of the African National Congress from OAR Tambo, and a member of the committee.
I think that's it about my side. Then, your side, I don't know who's leading the delegation from your side.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members of the Portfolio Committee. I'm Robin Crewe. I'm the acting chairperson of the NRF board. I'll give the members of the executive committee and an opportunity to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Good morning, members of PPC and other colleagues. My name is Gamson Sole. I'm the acting CEO of the NRF, but the deputy CEO of Research Innovation Support and Advancement of the NRF. Thank you.
Good morning, members of PPC. My name is Daisy Klematula, and I'm the executive director responsible for knowledge management and evaluation at the NRF.
Good morning to all of you. My name is Bishan Singh. I'm the CFO at the National Research Foundation.
Good morning to all. My name is Beverly DeMont, and I'm in charge of science advancement at the NRF.
Good morning. My name is Patrick Thompson. I am the group executive responsible for human resources and people relations within the NRF.
The next group will be the group from the Department of Science and Technology. They let them introduce themselves. We'll start here.
Thanks, sir. I'm Leander Frank, Parliament of Labour Officer.
Can you use the micro because everything is recorded?
Morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Martin Mulcahy, Special Advisor to the Minister of Science and Technology.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Thomas Osterheide. I'm a Deputy Director General in the Department of Science and Technology.
Is that all from the Department? I see some of the...
Morning, honorable members. My name is Peter Matutu. I'm the Chief Director for Human Capital and Science Platform from the DFT.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. My name is Hepin Lisa from DSC, Director Governor.
Good morning, members. My name is David Magula. I'm a Chief Director for Policy Planning, Governance and Monitoring Evaluation.
They are honorable members, they are not just members. That's why they horn before them. Okay, thank you very much. Anyway, I see maybe there may be other people from other organizations that I have not introduced. May they introduce themselves also. I want to know everybody who is with us.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, my name is Malfa. I am from Parliamentary Communications Services.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Honorable members, I'm the Incoming Committee Assistant.
Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Tanzani from PNG.
Okay, I think we've got everybody. Oh, there's one lady there. Why is she not there?
He must
be from Media, I'm sure.
Yes, I am.
I knew.
Media 24. Michelle O'Connor from Media 24.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Members and the delegation from another DST and other organizations present here. Before we start, I just want to express the concern by the committee, not only about you, but about a very bad developing trend. The first one, many entities that come here, they tend to send their documents without being paginated, in other words, without being numbered. And it becomes difficult to, when we interact here, to easily identify where the area of probably concern is because it's not paginated. That's the first one. Second one is, which is very serious actually, is the tendency that documents are brought just a day before we meet, or even sometimes even only the same day of the meeting. So we thought that it is very important that we express this concern because we have taken a decision now that we are not going to accept any presentation if we have not enough time. By a rule of parliament, documents must be here at least a week or two before so that you have enough time to go through them and register whatever is our oversight concern. So we wanted to stress this so that you must not say in the future that you are taken by surprise, but we felt that we should because we only received this document yesterday. And we felt like it's because it's not you alone, but almost all the entities that have come, they have had one or the other problem. So it's better that we put it as a warning that in future we need to get these things according to the rules and regulations of Parliament in order that we do work. In fact, oversight work here is not about policing what you do, in fact, support assisting what you do in terms of public concerns. So it is to our interest to have us looking at your work thoroughly so that we can tell you what, how to strengthen yourselves in terms of parliamentary and public expectation. So this is not about us trying to act as watchdogs, but it's about us trying to help because we feel that we are the same government and we have to assist one another. So now, if you do not give us the documents in time, they give us a program to perform that work. And it then reflects to the committee that it's not doing its work well, when in fact, you is not cooperating very well with the committee. So I do not want, because there was an argument that has happened in the committee, which took a long time. It took a long time. I did not want us to reopen it in the presence of many outsiders. I thought that I should put it as a prerequisite of this presentation. So I'll allow the leader of the education then to give us the presentation without wasting any time. Thank you very much for your audience.
Thank you, Chair. I will do the presentation on behalf of the NLF. In terms of your concerns, we've noted them, and I apologize if there's been any oversight on our part. To the best of my knowledge, and the concerns of the office, we've tabled the report in March this year, and the presentation was given as per deadline, so we can, I can always have a conversation with you about this. But as I said, if there's any oversight on our part, we'd like to apologize. Chair, what time are you giving? So,
According to my timetable here, you are up to 11 o'clock.
Okay.
And then between 11 and 11:30, then we will begin questions and answers.
Thank you very much. Once again, greetings to the Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of the PPC, my colleagues from the DSC, as well as others who are here. As you can see from the first slide, the theme is research driving sustainability, and we look at this generation of new knowledge as what is sustainable. I must upfront apologize that the CEO is not here, Dr. Alberson Yarsfeld, and he tenders his apologies. We'd also like to thank you for the privilege once again of being able to share with you the work that we do, and we see this as a privilege and an opportunity to meet with you, to get your wisdom so that we can take on board some of the concerns and be able to act on it. So thank you for that opportunity. I will start off by giving a corporate overview of the NRF. For those new members who have joined, the new honorable members who have joined the PBC, just as a reminder and a background, the NRF mandate is driven by the NRF Act No. 23 of 1998, and essentially it is to promote and support research through funding human resource development and the provision of the necessary research facilities. It is the view of the Minister of Science and Technology, as well as the view of the NRF, that you may have the best infrastructure, you may have the best space, you may have the best equipment, but if you don't have well-trained, appropriate human capital and expertise, then all of that comes to zero. So a large part of our effort is ensuring in delivering a next generation of researchers with the appropriate skills. And, of course, we are in the business of knowledge creation, so this is to facilitate the creation of knowledge and ultimately to contribute to government's goals, government's outcomes of a better life for all by the improvement of the quality of life of our people. I would draw your attention to our Vision 2015, and as you can see on the slide there, Vision 2015, we on this triangle here, you see the three drivers: its purpose, platform, and people. Our mission is defined in a triangle: world-class research, a transformed society, and a sustainable environment. I want to draw your attention. I'm not going to use this because I might just slap it in your eye. I just want to draw your attention to the strategic goals, the five strategic goals: a vibrant national science system, leading-edge research, technology, and innovation platforms, world-class science benchmarking and ground systems, a representative research and technical workforce in South Africa, internationally competitive science, technology, innovation system. And all these five strategic goals lead to one very central and important system goal, that is a prosperous and sustainable African landscape. That is our ultimate aim through the NRF. I will refer to this later as I look at our KPIs in terms of how we're doing in these areas contributing to the system goal. If I look at the core competencies of the National Research Foundation of South Africa, we have very robust grant management systems. We have excellent peer evaluation process and systems. where excellence is placed at the forefront of anything we do. We have strategic and research information management and dissemination systems. The NRF provides a state-of-the-art research platform. We have science and technology management expertise, specialized research capacity, and we act as a catalyst for local and international research collaboration through our international relations and cooperation directorates. One of the cross-cutters of the organization is science advancement and science engagement, and having those platforms and expertise so that we cut across the sector from national research facilities to higher education to high school education, etc. And that is an important part which I'll allude to later. If I look at the strategic goals that we have, and they're defined here by the various colors, promoting internationally competitive research, growing a representative science and technology workforce, etc., this here tries to map out how are we doing in terms of progress towards Vision 2015. Now, the proportion of global R&D output, we are targeting 1% in Vision 2015. But if you look at our actual projections, we're not going to reach this. The reason for that is that we are not catching up as fast as the world is investing and improving. So percentage-wise, our percentage becomes lower because the world is investing larger. So when we compare our percentage as a percentage of global R&D output, it's still under a percent. So one of the things that we have to do in order to play catch-up is probably, you know, invest more in R&D, in innovation, etc., if you want to increase the proportion of global R&D output. This has been very satisfying, the number of NRF-rated researchers. At the moment, we have some 2,500 researchers on the system, the latest information. One thing that I must allude to is that of the 2,500 rated researchers, one-third of them are from the social science and humanities, which is very pleasing, especially if you look at interdisciplinary, transdisciplinary, and cross-disciplinary research. In terms of the second strategic goal, the proportion of NRF-rated researchers from designated groups, we are not happy with the number of black women researchers, especially, that are coming through the system. And therefore, we have to look further down the line to see how can we address that to ensure that more women get their doctoral degrees so they can follow the ratings, they can get into the rating track and establish themselves as researchers. We have some instruments, we have some interventions, and we're trying to work very hard on addressing that. Operating world-class evaluation and grant-making systems, this has been very satisfying in terms of the completion rate of applications. Of course, the proportion of available grant funding disbursed, we disburse, but we're not in control of universities actually spending the money. And often we have to be on the back to say, okay, fine, you've got the money now, you need to spend it, so that when we look at the balances that we have, it looks more realistic. But we're trying to target 100% spend in Vision 2015. In terms of providing cutting-edge research, technology, and innovation platforms, you would see that our national research facilities, the quantum and the impact factors of the journal articles that are being published, is incrementally increasing. But of course, that is directly related to the number of high-level personnel that are researchers in those national facilities. And that, of course, dictates the progress there. The doctoral students supported, you can see that we have a target of 2,000 by the year 2015, 2,000 doctoral students who graduate per annum. At the moment, we graduate 27 students per million of population, which translates roughly to about 1,200 students per annum. Later on, I'll allude to our scaling up the South African Research and Development Enterprise, where we've modeled how to actually have 6,000 PhD students per annum. Obviously, the NRF does not work in a vacuum. We work in a very strategic environment. We are guided by the National Research and Development Strategy, the 10-Year Innovation Plan, more recently the National Development Plan, Vision 2030, and of course, we also have to take into account, seeing that we work with higher education, the DHED funding framework and the transformation goals. So this year, the latest post-school education and training green paper is very central to this to what we do as well, because that does impact on the nature of our business. If I take the 12 outcomes of Dublin related to it, you would see that the DSC and NRF are actually responsible for delivering on outcome 5, which is a skilled and capable workforce to support the inclusive growth path. On this part, you see that although the NRF does not directly participate in other areas, there's an indirect NRS contribution for funded research that may influence those outcomes. To give you an idea of the landscape of the innovation system value chain, we are involved in the generation of knowledge in basic research, to applied research, down to near commercialization. Interestingly enough, the NRS plays in two different spaces. We play in the space here as a grant-making and funding agency, but we also play in the space of our national research facilities whereby cutting-edge research is done. For example, ISEMBA Labs, the South African Institute for Aquatic Biodiversity, the South African Astronomical Observatory, etc. We also have a program that's funded by the DTI, which is TIP, which is Technology to Human Resources and Industry Program. This is largely a collaboration with industry and academia. And, of course, we have our new sister agency, the Technology Innovation Agency, and it's important that we work together whereby we identify projects that could be commercialized, that could be incubated, that could have resulted in spin-off companies, that TIA does then nurture those. In terms of our investments, our R&D investments, we have to take into account the 10-year innovation plan of the DSP, which has the grand challenges and the areas of geographic advantage. Now, here are your grand challenges. What you'll see is that it appears to be skewed towards space science and technology and astronomy. Let me just remind ourselves that the reason you see those large increases is because of the investments made in the Square Kilometer Array project. So it actually puts those out of kilter, and it looks very high compared to the rest. But we have to take into account the current investment that's being made in SKA. Once again, that leads on to this year. You can see the SKA investment here being the largest. But I think what's interesting is that high-end research platforms is also playing a very central role. And I must congratulate the DSC and our national government for the foresight shown in the need to invest in high-end research equipment if we want to be globally competitive in research. Let me then revert to the financial plan of the organization. This is to give you an indication of the NRS sources of income. That is your designated income there, shown in those blocks. This here is the funds that are brought forward. Okay. The one where we see a thicker band there is because of the SKA carryover. And then, of course, our MTF allocation. In summary, our baseline allocation has been reduced by 0.8% currently. However, this needs to be seen against the background of some additional funding that the DSC has found to be able to be inserted into human capital development programs. So if I look at the principles of our investments, the principle we use is that we have to have a balance between strategy-driven and demand-driven research. Secondly, the principle of competition, merit-based peer review funding for all types of funding applications, that we take transformation imperatives into account. I think the one thing that I must mention is that in certain quarters, they think that transformation and excellence are mutually exclusive. They're not. They can work together as long as you set your targets and you dig deep enough and create the intervention, we would be able to in some way address the transformation goals of our country. Fairness, transparency, and accountability is another principle. Service delivery is high on our agenda. And, of course, we try to invest in the rotation of expertise. So if we don't have the requisite expertise within the NRS, then we look at outside of the NRS to find the appropriate people to be able to advise and to be able to drive certain interventions forward. Of course, the doctoral degree, as the chairman well knows, is a very, very important driver in our system, and he's been a supporter of the PhD as a driver within the South African context in order for us to fully participate in transitioning from a resource-based economy to a knowledge-based economy. If I look at the NRS MTF allocation, there's a reduction in the baseline. In 2010-11, it was 1,078,945, it's 1.070 billion. Now, I think what's important is that despite this year, the NRS have to take a step back and say, how do we manage these reductions? And based on a previous allocation where we were forewarned by the DSP that there will be budget cuts because of the recession, we have to manage these. And let me share with you the way we've managed this year. we've put in some efficiency savings and austerity measures. Firstly, we try to leverage economies of scale by negotiating rates with suppliers. We try cost savings through automated processes such as NRF online submission system, workflow processes for supply chain management. We also try to do more video conferencing rather than traveling to destinations and saving costs there as well. So we relook at all of those. Then, of course, we also have to be realistic and benchmark ourselves against similar organizations, both nationally and internationally. Also, another intervention that's been put into place is looking at the staff plan. I'll talk more about that later, but we've implemented the staff plan. We've had our five-year review completed, and there are a number of recommendations which we have started to implement. The post-retirement medical benefit liability reduction has been reduced to a buyout. We've reduced our liability from $136 million to $12 million. And, of course, we also have a rollout of student tracking system. If I move to the human resources components, the staff plan includes information and analysis of current staff profile, race, gender, age, etc., the implications profile, and, of course, what we've done is that if you look at this proposal of the staff establishment, we consider the following in terms of estimated cost and current budget. We look at vacant positions, required positions, an optimal structure, factor succession planning accounts, look at employment equity, but also look at training and development of people within the organization. So, of course, that will feed into our implementation strategy, and it's an important part in ensuring that we're the fact in the system, that we address it, and we deal with it effectively. Let me then take you to the divisions of the NRF, one of the more significant division of the NRF is the Research and Innovation Support and Advancement. And within the system, this consumes about 80% of the NRF's work. Within the system here are six directorates. We have the Knowledge Management and Evaluation Directorate, of which Dr. Selma Stella is the Executive Director. Here, of course, is the repository of all knowledge here, but also for evaluation and rating of researchers takes place here. We have the International Relations and Cooperation Directorate, and of course, the new DG9 program for the previous DDG for International Relations, Dr. Thomas of the Haider, and that we have been building up over the years, especially with the minister's emphasis on enhancing bilateral relations in Africa. So that's pretty significant. Then, of course, we have the ARIC division, the Applied Research, Innovation, and Collaboration, which also includes the TIP program. Then, of course, we have a very important directorate called the Human and Institutional Capacity Development Directorate that takes care of the South African Researchers Initiative, that takes care of the Equipment Initiative, that takes care of all the bursaries and scholarship programs, the PhD program, etc. And then, of course, we have the Knowledge Field Development Directorate, which deals with blue skies research, the competitive funding for rated researchers, deals with the South African National Antarctic Program, and most importantly, deals with the centers of excellence, which are critical drivers in delivering high-end mass human capital, appropriate human capital. If I look at the RESAR income, and you can see over time here that there's a core grant and ring fence. This is the TIP funding. Interestingly enough, the Department of Higher Education and Training is also working very closely with the Department of Science and Technology, and they've given just for these a scarce skills development fund, over $100 million this year, to deploy that into the scarce skills areas within higher education institutions. We have other dedicated income. The special projects refer to, one, the square kilometer array, two, the Research Information Management System, RIM, and three, the NRF is also the host of the International Council of Science Regional Office for Africa. So we host that, but it provides us with a platform to access the rest of Africa and to be able to coordinate activities as well. You'd also see that, you know, over time, that there's been a steady increase for which we are grateful, that the budget is growing. And the DSP is constantly lobbying for more resources to ensure that we are able to deliver the things that we want to deliver on. This is a very important slide to us because it captures in a summary form the business of the NRF in terms of human capital development. And what we've done is we've essentially looked at the researchers in the core, from students to postdocs to visiting professors to specialists. And we looked at them as next-generation researchers, emerging researchers, established researchers, and then, of course, our strategic investments. You would see that we move from a discipline-based approach to a strategic focus. But what we've also included here is that in the Tutuka program, it's aimed at academics, especially black African women, who are on the staff of universities but do not have a PhD. For them to get 3 years of funding for a PhD, another 3 years of funding that's post-PhD, and another 3 years of funding that allows them to establish themselves as researchers. It is 9 years of sustained funding, dedicated funding that allows them to be within the system. Now, one of the bad facts is that only 34% of staff at universities in South Africa have a doctoral degree. And that creates a huge block in the system. So we need to unblock that system in some way. Obviously, we need more resources to open this up to ensure that we transit from 34 to at least 50% over the next 5 years or so. I'm quite happy to look at these figures later on if you want to, but there's been a general increase over time, as you can see, for the different programs. Interestingly enough, incentive funding for rated researchers has moved from 10 million to 100 million. The question is, why do we invest so much in the rated researchers? The rated researchers produce 80% of the peer-reviewed publications in this country. The rated researchers also supervise 80% of the master's, doctoral, and postdocs in this country, so they high deliverers. And the amount of money we give them is a small amount, between 40,000 rand to 100,000 rand, to enable them to go to a conference or to take on a student or to use for some running expenses. So it is more a kind of acknowledgement and an appreciation of their contribution rather than any substantive research funding. Of course, the one area that we have to do in terms of our transformation program is the Tutuka program. There should be a stage where the amount we invest in rated researchers is the same amount as we're investing towards our transformation goal. If I look at UN capacity development funding trends, that's our spend over here. You'll see this green blip here, which is 2010-2011. That increase there in the next generation was due to the 53 million that the minister made available to us in a larger funding of 255 million to the NRF as a once-off funding. I think the take-home message is that when you put in more resources, there will be results of additionality, that you will be able to increase the number of outputs in terms of students, research outputs, etc. If I look at the next generation researchers, once again, I'm referring to the students that the PhD track is, the budget is increasing. But this year, we need to increase more, so we are constantly looking, how can we reprioritize our investments so that we are able to take to be able to graduate more members of staff who require doctoral degrees. The number of students supported by the NRF, as you can see over time here, if I take the BTEC or honors degrees, from 2010 it's 1696. That's our projected. That's your actual there. So we're punching above our weight in those areas. Although, these are only the number of students we can support. There are thousands of students out there who are fundable, but whom we do not have the funding for. So I think we need to alert ourselves that the NRF and the DST in general, we fund only 4 out of every 10 possible fundable students. So a large part of that is private or industry as well. And you can see the trend there. We also want to grow the postdoc cohort, but we also want our postdocs not to be in South Africa. Our students need to get out of this country, have that international experience, and Che, you know the value of those international experiences, and come back and put back into the system. Now, if I look at the next generation of researchers, and we have to concern ourselves with race demographics, it's something that we have to keep on the radar all the time, because we have specific targets in terms of this year. The total black in 2009 and 2010 was 73% for honors. We are saying 75% was the actual, so there's been an increase. And as you can see, our targets are moving towards 80%. So here's our various targets, but this is not an event. Transformation is a journey. So we have to constantly be tracking it and ensuring that the interventions we put will yield the results that we want. If I look at the gender demographics, of course, it's very high on the agenda, the gender demographics. These figures, although, they look okay, they're still not acceptable enough. We feel that there are lots more women out there who have the potential and the capability to be able to deliver high-end skills and, supervise students that need to be identified and nurtured. And so we've embarked on a program whereby, rather than being passive and waiting for applications, is to go into those institutions and identify them through the universities themselves. If I look at citizenship, of course, Dr. Matutu will indicate to you that in the new scholarships policy, we've now looked at South African citizens and permanent residents as one under the banner there, but also to indicate that if you look at the split, you know, quite often the NRF is taken to task for, we have so many students from outside of South Africa, why are they not supported? Obviously, we have to seek our own first, but we've allocated 20% of our funding for students that are non-South African. 15% in SADC countries, 10% in SADC countries, 5% in the rest of Africa, and 5% for out of Africa. So we try to manage that. But it's largely on a first-come, first-served basis. The demand exceeds the supply, and we try to manage that as well. Okay, we allocate 20% of our scholarships to students from outside of South Africa, 10% to SADC countries, 5% to other parts of Africa, to the rest of Africa, and 5% for outside of Africa. Okay. If I look at our emerging researchers, and I mean, this is a very important part, is a very important group to nurture. Once again, you know, there's grants that have increased here. The, as I said, the 2010, 2011 was through that once-off amount that the minister provided to us in terms of the 250 million, but 53 million going into emerging researchers. Obviously, to change the culture and to really have a paradigm shift, you also have to have a whole lot of postdoctoral fellows within the system as well. If I go to established researchers, of course, what you can see is that the increase in international collaboration is due to the rollout of new bilateral agreements. And Dr. Hofstadheide has been working quite hard on that in terms of international relations and within the African paradigm. If you consider that our supervisory capacity is low, if we only have 34% of staff with doctoral degrees, internationalization is a strategic driver to expand our supervisory base and also gives us access to equipment, to expertise in labs or in research sites in other parts of the world. So it is key to moving this forward. So, you know, as I said, we don't look at things in a vacuum. We see this whole thing as an ecosystem, and that one relates to the other. Now, the South African Research Shares Initiative is a very, very critical and significant initiative that the DST has made available to the NRF to manage. As you recall, we have 92 research chairs in the country that were awarded in the various rounds that I indicate here. You would also see that in terms of distribution, the historically disadvantaged universities, the rural-based universities, and the universities of technology were not the significant recipients of chairs. In this round, where we advertised 62 chairs, and for which we had 406 applications, of which 270 were recommended for funding, we could only award 60. But the one defining line, there's two defining lines. The first defining line is that excellence remains as a critical cornerstone of the decision-making as to what chairs need to be awarded. It was a transparent, robust process. The other important line is that the minister, in a communication to the NRF, indicated in no uncertain terms that for those universities, those rural-based universities, those historically disadvantaged universities, those universities of technology who previously did not enjoy the privilege of hosting a chair, but who now met the requirements, due consideration should be given to them. And so the adjudication committee, which had no association with universities, which was an independent panel, and NRF was hands-off, looked at this directive from the minister, looked at the terrain, what it was like, and made decisions. And in that decision-making, this is what turned out with the 60 chairs. University of Western Cape got the most number of chairs, 7 chairs. Now, each of these chairs is worth $2.5 million per annum for 15 years. Renewable every 5 years. That's a massive injection of funding. 60 chairs at $2.5 million per annum for 15 years is a massive, plus the other 92. So there's a huge investment by government and the DSP. If you look at the Shuana University of Technology, 6 chairs. Now, remember, in this final year, what is looked at is the university capable. Do they have the PQM? Do they have the necessary infrastructure? Is it contained in their vision? The university had to make a compelling case that they were the suitable host for that. And, of course, many of them made the case. I think the other shift that happened, and I must emphasize this here, from the NR perspective, we didn't look at universities as, traditional universities, research-intensive, etc. We didn't look at good universities and poor universities. We looked at competence and pockets of excellence within universities. So it was targeting pockets of excellence within universities for university leadership to identify that and say, well, this is going to be our flagship program. And we worked very closely with them. We even put intervention of saying, okay, fine, do you need resources to be able to write up the proposal? We provide the resources for them. Because if you look at the capacities of the different universities, they vary greatly. If I just go back to the slide, as you can see, so a number of universities of technology and a number of historically black universities have received and are now the recipients of chairs. These two universities that did not receive any chairs, of which only one does not have a chair yet, which is VUT, we made personal universities, met with the research leadership of the universities, discussed what was possible. Although they didn't get chairs, they had chairs that were recommended. So remember, 270 recommended, only 60 could be awarded. But the message, I think, that, you know, we discussed with the minister, there's a society there. There's an intellectual society that's hungry and ready to do the work. It's not a lazy bunch that say, no, we'll just shirk our responsibility. But they are trying out there. There's a hunger and a thirst to do the work. It's a question of us now finding the resource to be able to meet that need. It also gives universities a wonderful opportunity to audit themselves and say, what are we good at? One thing I want to draw your attention to is that a minimum of 16 chairs in the social science and humanities were awarded. Now, let me give you a flavor of some of the topics of those chairs. Intellectualization of African languages, multilingualism and education. We're making a 15-year investment in this chair because we think it's important. Indigenous knowledge systems, international development law and African economic relations, migration, language and social change, customary law, land reform and democracy in South Africa. I mean, for those of you who had the budget speech of the Minister of Education yesterday, the question of languages came up. I mean, if you take Afrikaans as a language and the way Afrikaans has evolved into a higher education language, surely if we have the will for other indigenous languages in our country, then, and if enough research is done, we can arrive at the stage as well. So the chairs provide the vehicle to make that happen. Of course, we have some development as well. There's new funding, and I think I must thank the DSP for that and national government. That we, in the new year, we are getting 72 million rand more, largely for research, theoretical researchers. The professional development program of 22 million. We are now able to roll out the incentive funding in full for these researchers. We've also created collaboration because we look at the national research facilities as an extension of university infrastructure. It does not belong to someone else there.
Sorry, just to interrupt on that point. There's a slide before this one.
Yeah.
Chair. I need to apologize. This morning when I got up, I decided to include the slide, so I must apologize. I should have said so. I just felt it important to demonstrate this. I could have said this in words. Yes, I'll agree.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
I think I'd do better than that. I'll give you the whole list of the 60 chairs so you have an idea of the entire spread in the country and the plus the 92. Of course, we've also had developments in funding for rollout of the student tracking system, the South African Researchers Initiative, and rooms as I indicated. If I look at this new funding, and I mentioned the 72 million, we are still in conversation with the DSC as to how we're going to disburse the 72 million. The number of grants to researchers, the number of honors student supporters, the number of master's student supporters, the number of doctoral student supporters. There's been a cry for an increase in the value of the bursary and also an increase in the number of the bursary. So what you see projected here, as you can see in the outer years, there's 295 million rand more and 321 million more. So we are projecting and saying, well, if you have to increase the value of the bursaries and the number of bursaries in budget, this is what we think we should allocate. It's still not adequate enough, because if you take a child who's a first-degree student in the household, there's an expectation for them to put food on the table. So to retain a student in the system is quite a challenge if you are competing with an organization that's paying them a full salary and you are giving them a bursary that's actually not comparable. Of course, these are the VISA KPIs, and I can, you know, it's the two areas that I'm promoting: internationally competitive research and growing at a presence of science and technology workforce. You're welcome to look at those numbers there, and I'm quite happy to take questions on this afterwards. Okay? Then, of course, we have science advancement. And there are three areas: science awareness, science communication, and science education. Of course, if you look at the income, the challenge is to increase the core funding to 70% of our funding. And this year that you see in shape here is basically undetermined because it's all contract funding that comes in, obviously. And which makes it a challenge in terms of strategic planning, science advancement, and science engagement. Some of the things in science advancement is a repositioning with the NRF. What we've done is, Dr. DeMonte was here, is now the corporate executive, whereby we've asked someone now in corporate governance as a group executive for science engagement and science advancement, so that we can run this across the system in terms of the national facilities, higher education institutions, as well as the school system. So we're trying to position that strategically. There is, of course, a document out. There's a framework for a public engagement strategy. It's a draft submission. And this conversation that's going on between the DSC and ourselves in how do we actually develop a national strategy for science advancement. One of the things that we are trying to do is to try and reduce the number of contracts, as I indicated, so that we are able to make more strategic decisions regarding science advancement. These are the KPIs for science advancement, but quite often they become unpredictable if you can't, unpredictable to target if you don't know what your income is going to be, because it's not a constant stream of income, it's coming in contracts. The National Research Facilities, of course, we have the South African Environmental Observation Network, ITEMBA Lab, the Aquatic Institute of Aquatic Biodiversity, Hartford Sports Radio Astronomy, and the National Zoological Garden. Of course, you're aware of, as well, that our structure is as follows, that we now have a group executive astronomy after the minister had an assessment of the astronomy cluster. The other two clusters are the nuclear cluster and the biodiversity cluster, and there is a deputy CEO post that's vacant at the moment. Because the national facilities are still under discussion by the ministry, that position has not been filled at this point in time. If I look at the national facilities income, as you can see here, it varies across there, but it's fairly constant over the years. So there hasn't been drastic increases or significant increases in the funding of the national research facilities.
And this other cluster, where there is a vacancy, what's the problem?
Sorry? You're talking about here?
Yeah.
The vacant?
Yeah.
Okay. We had, you remember in the old typology, we had two vice presidents, one for RISA and one for National Research Facility. The VP for the National Facilities at NEST, that has not been filled yet, because we still have a discussion about the future of the national facilities. And at the moment, astronomy has been taken out and as a cluster, there's still discussion about the National Zoological Gardens, as well as SEON, and we're waiting for ministry's directives so that we don't want to just place someone in there and find that there's not enough entities to manage. So,
what about the nuclear cluster?
So the nuclear cluster, yes, no, that is on. So at the moment, what's happening is the NRF CEO is managing all of that. So there's a direct reporting line of these clusters here, the CEO in the interim, until we get the director and we're a little more sure. Does that answer your question? Of course, we have a number of challenges in the national facilities. What you see in white is the challenge, and what you see in yellow is our mitigation. The national skill base, that's our mitigation. The age equipment infrastructure, that's the mitigation there. Access and use of facilities, of course, we try to use collaboration, to promote collaboration between HEIs and facilities. And of course, this is important here, the evolution or the evolving of new national research facilities. Of course, there's been an infrastructure roadmap there, and a thought exercise as to what should be and what could be a national research facility. Just to give you some of the highlights, Itemba Labs will increase active beam time on two accelerators to 75% of available time. Chair, this is your field. So because of the beam splitter, they're able to increase that time. So it's quite an advanced development. If you take Hartwell, they'll supply 95% of time available on the 2060 telescope for international VLBI experiments. Publication authored has increased from 35 to 40. We've increased the target then. The NZG, which does ex situ research, has state-of-the-art molecular diagnostic laboratory, which they recently built, and they're getting good results in the moment. Still on its agreements with 15 institutions to provide observation data, so it's a virtual entity in a way. And FIRE will expand its aquatic biodiversity collection to include substantial holdings of 4 additional taxa. If I look at the National Research Facility KPIs, they are there, spelled out there once again, promoting internationally competitive research and growing a representative science and technology workforce. Chair, what I want to indicate is that the spectrometer array in South Africa, that decision as you fully aware is still pending. Irrespective of the decision, the Meerkat 64 dish array will be a world-class and competitive telescope for the next 20 years. So the capability and capacity with Meerkat and the 64 dishes is a huge investment by the government, but there's a huge return on investment as well. Finally, let me just summarize in brief. Firstly, the grant making has been streamlined with joint planning by the NRS and DSC, and we have an excellent working relationship with the DSC whereby we work together in terms of planning and managing things. So that's very, very welcome. We have developed a document called Scaling Up the R&D Enterprise and developed a funding framework, which we submitted to the minister. She has in principle endorsed it and has indicated to us certain changes that have been made. It's also being done in conjunction with the DSC in terms of developing an overall strategy for human capital development, and that's what we're currently busy with. Of course, as I indicated, science advancement requires an overarching national strategic framework to elevate its impact. Once again, we're in discussion with the DSC about this, and we look forward to developments there. The National Research Facilities, as I indicated, is discussion with the DSC about how do we strategically position national research facilities, how do we plan for future national facilities. Is there something that says, okay, fine, you can also decommission a national research facility? So we need to look at all scenarios to grow and to develop as well. I think finally what I want to say is that the overall growth in NRR funding reflects very positively on the commitment by both government and the DSC in identifying that research is a priority, it is a driver of the economy, it allows us to be globally competitive in a knowledge-based economy, and for that we're grateful. And we hope that we'll be able to grow from there. So, honorable members of the PPC and honorable chairman, thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, acting CEO. Without wasting time, I will allow members to interact with you. Let's find out what is their opinion about your presentation. Honorable Nungonyan, I see your hand first. Honorable Prachi, Lawrence, Chumi, in that order.
Chair and honorable members, thank you, CEO. All the effect. And also the chair. I think, first of all, thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you very much for your explanation about receiving this thing. We excuse us then, because I'm one of those people who receive this agreement now. And one of the people who does not want to be ambushed. But I take your explanation, and I think it is helpful to me. I think first point, yes, the purpose of the presentation, as the title clearly indicates, is to receive and brief by the annual settlement plan put 2012 to 2050. That is this financial year to us, obviously, with a view to understand and be bold enough to stand up in Parliament to support the budget. Obviously, you know, last year you did the same thing. And last year you did give us some indication what was your plan for 2012-2013. We did raise many things, and I'm happy to say from your presentation today, it looked like you did, particularly about the intervention of the minister about that issue. You did actually apply your mind to address the concerns of Parliament around those things. I would be happy if you would just indicate that of the concerns that they raised, some of them here, and particularly some of the plans that you put in place, the area that you had some challenges, and so that you can just quite indicate to us what are those areas and what was the reason. And I think that is the first point. The second one, again, which is the reason for the hearing today, is about that we went to Parliament and then said, no, we trust you. Please provide this money to this entity. It's going to be incredibly handy. Whether then passed the audit at all last year. But unfortunately, I think you and these other places today. And whether, in terms of the control of the finances that have been given, you can assure us that no, you did well last year. And if there are any challenges, please share with us, with a view that you can trust you, that the millions that you need this year, we can stand up boldly in Parliament and say, as one of the comments that is overseeing this entity, that in a short, and we're really happy with your explanation. Third point, that is the concern that you have raised, I think, on page 31. Of the slide, that's around the distribution of chairs.
The old one or the current?
That one.
No.
In fact, from that one, my question, we go to 32 up to 34, but let's start there. The major point of the challenges ahead of you and the intervention of the minister ahead of you. The various points are around the geographical square, around the firm women that are our pity, that it is there, I think there's some significant movement that is appreciated. But notwithstanding what will hold us of these 60 and the constraints that we have, which I understand, that the disadvantage, the historical disadvantage of institutions of higher learning, coming second best, again, is a concern. I know we have independent people effort, international standard, you name them, criteria. I don't question that. Is there no way that you can do more to really assist? Because the second page, 34, 32, Forte, I may be biased because I'm a product of Forte, and UNISA, I may be biased because I'm also a product of UNISA. But these institutions, you see, have done more. They've also, the disadvantage, could see this. Nothing. In terms of the award of the chairs for this year and next year, what can be done? What can be done? At least to assist these institutions. Where with the WUSU, Water Sector University, and the others, there's the zero use there, and the very well. There's no nothing that could be done because we need this intellectual capacity there. There's no question about it to affirm them. The other thing is the question of the nomenclature. You reminded me about the VP, the president, and then the issue of the international standard. But when you meet your peers internationally, who are you? Something like that. But I think we found each other last year that you did with the, but I'll be comfortable. What is the trend now after this? This VP president issue internationally. I know nationally we found each other, but I don't know any South African who meet another counterpart in Europe or anywhere in the world.
Honorable member, you must remember that we also are limited in time. There are still other people. If you can summarize.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. To the next point, which is the last one. The indigenous knowledge system. I've heard, but what is the plan? I'm satisfied that we are now sensitive on this issue. But what is the plan for this financial year 2012-2013 around affirming this area to make sure that also it's forming part? And there are almost tests also to advance the indigenous knowledge system in the country. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Member. The subsequent members, you remember that we have another presentation at 11:30, and already now the Honourable Member took 10 minutes. Now, if all of you will take 10 minutes, then we will really stay far behind time. It means the next presentation will start after 1 o'clock. And so you must not start crying to me that you need to go to the chamber. So I'm trying to say that other questions, if you have very relevant questions, you can ask them from outside. Or we can still prepare them. They are here. We can call them. I think we can slot them in other sessions. Other sessions that will be forthcoming in the next term or so. But I'm trying to say that let's stick to really important questions and be brief, so that they are having time. They can have time to respond. But there's no point if they can't respond. Question. Yes, Honorable.
Jefferson, I just want to quickly come with a proposal. That rather than saying we should ask questions outside, I believe that these questions need to be recorded. Rather, let's ask questions, allow questions to be asked, and maybe request that they respond in writing.
Okay, yeah, that is quite fine. In any event, questions, when they are asked, they are not for the individual alone, they are for the benefit of the whole committee and the delegation that is coming. They are quite correct, but I was trying to say that we must find a way to manage time, because I know the first people who complain is you about time. So, therefore, I'm saying that let us be together, we can do more if we manage that. So, okay, without wasting more time, can the next, I think you are the next, who are the next of lunch? I can't remember, but that order in which I had pointed you.
Thank you for your presentation, but I'm going to be a bit rude. I don't think your document is very user-friendly. Some of your drafts are printed in the wording or the numbers or the figures in green, and one cannot read it. For instance, page 22, page 25, page 26, and please, we all don't have the background that you have. The speed at which you present is sometimes too fast. And also, please, give us a list of acronyms at the back, you know, as an appendix or whatever. It's very useful. I'm going to stick with that. On slide 32, the awarding of the chairs, you've mentioned, is it 6 for the TUT? The TUT. Yes, now, we are all aware of the fact that this university is in trouble, and you mentioned that the criteria is competence and faculty excellence. We currently have Professor Messia as the administrator of the TUT. I don't need to give you the history of that university. So it sounds very strange to me that that university is the second, received the second most research chair. It also add to what my colleague said, the question about why so little, only one to UNISA. You mentioned on the slide that's missing, the 16 for human research and social, didn't get it properly. Are you aware of what the minister yesterday announced regarding the National Institute for Humanities and Social Sciences? Will it be in some way linked to it or whatever? I would like to know the background thereof. And also the fact that the minister had some research done last year by the UCT regarding the state of affairs of the humanities and social sciences. Why then only 16? If you can give us some background on that. Then you also mentioned, you used the word cut across to high schools, or whatever you said. What connection is there between your department or your foundation and you specifically mentioned high schools? I'm particularly interested in curriculum development and support that should be given to basic education regarding curriculum development. I asked the same question last week with the CSIR. And you also mentioned on slide 44, promote collaboration between higher institutions, education institutions. I need to know what exactly is that, your collaboration between your foundation and the different universities. It sounds perhaps really obvious, but I would like to have some more background on that. Thank you.
Mine is on page 27. The gender geography. The presenter mentioned that the number of women is not kind of satisfying. Now I wanted to know what are they doing in order for them to address that problem, since it's a problem. And on page 16, there is also a student role on tracking that they are having. Now after tracking them down, what are you doing? Thank you.
Thanks, Chaplain. Let me just start by commending the foundation. At least the one is able to refer their presentation, Mr. President. Thanks much. Chaplain, my first question is on slide 6. The number of English doctoral students for, no, not in relation, because we are already done with 2011-2012, 1,519. What I would like to know is, who are the students? Where are they from? Are they all South African? If there are some of our national, foreign nationals, how many are they and how many are South Africans? The other one is with regard to the, still on that slide, the proportion of global research and development output, which the CEO said won't be achieved, the 1% won't be achieved. Yes, he did indicate that they have mechanism in place, there are instruments in place to address that. But, Chairperson, according to me, there is no commitment, because that's what he's saying, but there's nothing on paper where we can be later, be able to hold them accountable, that this is what you commit on, and you haven't done it. And with regard to the challenges also that they identified, in the presentation they mentioned them. But in the ATP, they are, for some of us who are not the fundis in this field, it becomes difficult. The challenges and the mechanisms to address them are in the same, within the same paragraph. So I would request that they be separated. And even where they said it's in yellow, it's not everybody. We have an opportunity. We are in here that we are being told that those are the mechanisms to address these challenges. But my belief is that these are not the documents for this committee only. They do not end up here. So it's once they are, we have adopted them, then they become a part of public consumption. So the request that maybe public also be taken on board, because actually we are representing them here. And according to the Treasury, in their estimates for national expenditure, you had a vacancy of 109 as at September last year. And Treasury indicated that you were in the process of addressing that. So what I would like to find out is, what is the progress as of now, or as of this current time, with regard to addressing the debt vacancy of 109 opposed to positions? The other question, Chairperson, is what progress has been made in implementing recommendations with regard to the 2010 institutional review? The last one, what progress has been made with constituting the proposed governing and coordinating body for cooperation in science and technology and innovation? Those are the questions. I think I was.
I think those are the questions. If you can answer them.
Thank you, Chair. I will answer all the questions that have been raised. I'll also ask my colleagues to fill in should it be necessary.
As you have seen, no people who are opening the door is the next session. So, I'm not saying that we were supposed to be out, but I'm saying they're already waiting by the door. We have up to half past.
Okay. I will try and be economical.
That's why I've decided not to ask. I had some questions there, but I see that.
Hopefully, I'll be able to answer some of them that you have.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, this question really tugs at the heart of our business, and it's so important that I leave here with a sense of well-being, knowing that there's some shared understanding.
Mm.
Because the kind of question you raise is absolutely important. It's something that we grapple with all the time.
Mm.
It's a challenge we face, and we are not in the business of saying, well, you know, everything's okay.
Mm.
You've got to take the bull by the horns and deal with it. So let me deal with some of the questions you raised, and hopefully, you know, Vision and Patrick, if you and Beverly and Daisy and the chair of the board, if you'd like to, please do so. Honourable Member, the first question that you raised was the challenges of the plan. What are they? You know, in terms of rollout, etc. I think I used the word ecosystem earlier. You can't look at higher education and training in isolation. Because what happens is that what we receive and what we manage in terms of research and innovation and development is a product of what's downstream from primary school education to high school education, and the quality of what happens, the impact on what we receive at the end and how we grow the next generation of researchers. So the challenges, while we face them at the NRF level, we have to be in conversation with other parties that influence the system. And we've identified this, and of course, what we have put in place are bilaterals with a number of other entities, like the CHE, like TIA, like the HSRC, like the DSC, etc., so that we could try to shape some way of addressing these challenges. Honorable Member, you raised a very important question, because corporate governance, supply chain management, the fiscal responsibility is a huge, huge responsibility when you deal with taxpayers' money. I can stand up publicly and say I'm very, very comfortable with the NRF at the way, at the level of governance that we have, and the control that we have in place, and what we've instituted over the years, and the way we continue to develop this in ensuring that tight controls are in place. We have internal audit capacity, we have internal auditors, we have external auditors, and I'm sure Mr. Singh, who's our CFO and the group executive for finance, would want to add more to that later on. You raised the important question. I mean, the chair is topical. The one thing we came to peace ourselves when we started the chair is not everyone's going to be happy. Okay? But there's certain decisions that have to be made. And we, the minister's directive, was what was the guiding light to us. We had a hands-off approach from the NRF, whereby the system was shaped and put out there. Now, the geographical spread, the one thing that we did not want to determine, and in an open and a competitive system, is I didn't want one chair to feel inferior to another because we're trying to meet geographical spreads, or we're trying to say because you are a UOT, therefore you should be secure one chair, or because you're a rural-based university, you should get so many chairs. Because it diminishes then the value of the chair. And I don't think that's the intention. We want to uphold excellence, and our job was to try to find those pockets of excellence. Interestingly enough, if you go to the university and sometimes you ask the leadership, what is your research strength? They cannot give you an answer offhand. And so we have to do the business intelligence, look at the ISI index, and go to them and say, well, here's a presentation. This is what we know your university is good at. This is the area. These are the people at your university. And so we provided that kind of business intelligence for them to put up proposals. So, you know, the answer to your question, Honorable Member, is that I could be able to meet those other needs if I had more chairs. And I always want to focus, 270 recommended, which included those other universities that you mentioned, but only 60 available that could be funded. So, you know, we were in a catch-22. So the demand is there. The international standards, I mean, interestingly enough, when we look at the NRF Act, which has to be amended, and we only did the cosmetic changes at the moment when we were in Parliament last year, is the NRF decided that we should change the nomenclature from president to CEO in line with other organizations in the country, because we believe there's only one president, that's the president of the country, you know, in society. But the point you raise, which is a value in terms of negotiation, international negotiations, quite often you meet someone who's the president of an agency like the NRF, and you go to the CEO and you seem to be lesser. But fortunately for us, we don't attach ourselves to titles. We think the work should speak for itself. And even though the head of the National Science Foundation in the U.S. is known as a director, he's still highly respected because of the work they do. So we'd like to rather let the work and the track record of the organization speak for itself rather than our titles. So we are at peace with what we are. I hear this knowledge system very close to our heart. As you can see, there's been plans there. Ultimately, what we want to do, we want to establish a center of excellence in indigenous knowledge system. A center of excellence. Not the chairs only, but the chairs fit into the center of excellence. In order to arrive at the center of excellence, we have to develop the capacity and find the competence across the spectrum, across the landscape, to bring like-minded people together who have the passion and the energy to do IKF research, so that that becomes a fruition. So we have a plan for that. But as you rightly point out, it's a very important area. It's high on our radar. We've now spent $10 million on IKF. We've got $10 million set aside just for IKF. So it's a fairly substantive amount, relatively speaking. Ma'am, I think you made a good point about putting your questions in writing, and the NRF will be ready to respond to any further questions that you may have that will give you the peace of mind to be able to endorse what we're doing and feel a comfort. The document is just user-friendly. I will tend to agree because, I mean, different, you know, there's a difference between presenting the information and adding the artistic creativity. And quite often when you have service providers, they want to bring in the artistic creativity. You've got to be able to see the facts. Your point is well taken about the colors, which will factor in to the future. So thank you for that.
The acronyms.
And the acronyms. I also just want to say, honorable speaker, the first point you raised is, and as I indicated, I was quite surprised about the lateness of this document. To the best of my knowledge, you know, it was tabled in March, this annual report, this APP. The best of my knowledge, it was tabled in March here. And the timeline that was given to us, we adhere to. I will go back and look at it, honorable chair, and hopefully, I mean, I'm embarrassed because this is not the way we do business. The NRF has always had stuff in time here. TUT, why so many chairs? The question is, my mother, why so few chairs for TUT? What we did not want to do, we did not want to make judgments on institutions based on their health at that time as administrators of the university or the assessors, etc. We looked for pockets of excellence, of passionate, committed researchers who had a track record of delivery. Now, the university is awarded a chair. That's only the first step. They still have to get through putting up a winning research proposal, as well as having an appropriate warm body that can deliver the proposal. So there's a past it. They still have hurdles to go through. But what TUT has done, because they don't have the requisite human capital within the university, they now advertise all over the world for those chairs, which is a good strategy because you're bringing the best people in the business to the university. So, you know, I'm going to prejudge the university because based on written documentation there, on that condition, that's how those judgments were made. I'm sorry that I just mentioned high schools only. But what the point I'm trying to make is that when you look at a national strategy, and Debbie will talk more about this, she needs to, of science engagement, science involvement, it's not only in one silo. It starts from basic school education right to the top. But there isn't any strategy nationally at the moment that addresses that. We are trying our own small way to be able to do that, to deliver a document that will address that. Hence my reference to schools, because we have the science Olympiads and the science fairs, etc. So if you felt that I just confined myself to school, I'm sorry that you've got the wrong, you know, I could have transferred the wrong message. The National Institute for Social Science and Humanities, which Minister Ramani mentioned yesterday, I heard it for the first time yesterday, but wonderful news, because what it then does, it gives us an opportunity of having more resources of bringing these people together, because those chairs could easily sit in the National Institute. So in the discussion that I'm going to have with Deputy Minister Schlengiwe in Kiza, I met with her yesterday, and we are going to talk about this as well. The HEIs, what is the involvement of HEIs and the NRF? HEIs are one of our most important stakeholders. We work with them, we work with the students, the researchers, etc. But we also want to make sure that there's collaboration across HEIs, that the typology of historical advantage and disadvantage should be, you know, parked somewhere whereby each one of us are proud because we're excellent at what we do. And so we try to work with HEIs to bring like-minded and passionate people together. In terms of gender demographics on page 27, which you referred to, I mean, it is very close to our heart, but I say we are still not happy with it because we feel there's more that can be done. There's a huge demand for women there who want to do research. The resources aren't enough, and therefore we lobby for more resources. Until we reach a point whereby we feel there's some equity in terms of demand and supply, then we'll have a sense of comfort. Because you also have to be cognizant the life of a female researcher cannot be equated to a male researcher. They have interruptions in the career. All these things have to be factored into when you're actually making assessments of women researchers. Of course, excellence still remains a cornerstone, but we have to be cognizant of this. So when I talk about this target, we are constantly cognizant of, I mean, we look at 80% black, 60% women in our disbursements. Now, depending which program you're looking at, it varies considerably, but it's on our radar. Student tracking. The reason is that no longer can the NRF only report on input and output. You also have to report on outcome and impact. So your student tracking allows us to be able to track, to look at impact. Where are they in society, etc. We were unable to do that because we did not have an information system like HEMIS that could track students. Now we are working with HEMIS to be able to tag our students that receive NRF funding so we can track it. So that's part of our business system development. Student doctoral breakdown, I'm quite happy to provide the breakdown. I do not have the information readily yet, but I could quite actually send those that information in terms of South Africans, non-South Africans, SADC countries, Africa, and other countries. You'll be able to do that, as well as male, female, and of course the different disciplines as well. We are able to give you that data. Proportion of global R&D output. I tempered my response with a sense of realism, in the sense that we are not shying away from a target. We are saying 1% should be our target. But I'm saying that we need to be aware that while the rest of the world is investing more and moving forward, we are still playing catch-up. So the percentage, the goalposts keep shifting for us. And I just want to alert us to the fact that when we make that judgment, we need to be cognizant of the realities globally. The challenge, the yellow and the white writing, the events and challenge litigation, your policy is well taken. For the written documents, that should allude to that. So I think that's well taken in terms of the differentiation of that upon the slide. Estimates of national expenditure, I'm sure, Bishan, you would want to respond to that, as well as Patrick, on the HR progress. Progress in implementing review recommendations, I can say to you, is ongoing. I can say to you at this stage, I think we about 60% of the review recommendations have been implemented, but of course there are some recommendations that are time related. And so it's early days, because the review just taken place a year and a half, 2 years ago, so we are constantly working on that. But it's part of our dashboard where we are constantly monitoring how successful are we at implementing the review recommendations. Our relationship with TIA, yes, we have established a bilateral with TIA, and we are constantly working with them to see how can we, where we have projects, I've even asked that they be part of the SIP group so they could see projects that have been funded that they could take over. I trust that I have responded to your questions, and Christian and Patrick, you'd like to add?
Thank you, Jensen. Honorable members, with regard to the question about financial controls, let me take that and I'll ask Patrick perhaps to respond on the HR target. With regard to the financial compliance and the fidelity or the comfort that you want within the NRFM, one of the things that we do as Dr. Pillay mentioned was the level of internal controls that we've implemented, policies, etc. But what the assurance that I want to give you is that, first of all, the NRF has or is in full compliance of King 3. Those aspects that relate to a public entity, obviously you're not a private organization or a private company, and the PFMA. We regularly, on a quarterly basis, table our PFMA compliance report with the Audit and Risk Committee of the NRF. The other thing is with regard to our state of our financials. We did receive last year an unqualified audit report. I want to place on record here that we know we've closed off the books for the financial year that's just gone by, and the auditors have arrived there. It's looking positive. We've not picked up anything that's abnormal or out of the norm. Perhaps even go to the point of saying that we are quite comfortable that we should deliver another unqualified audit report for the year just gone by. Chair, I hope I've answered that question. If there's anything else required, I'm most glad to provide the information.
Honorable members, I will deal with the question around the vacancy rate. Our vacancy rate is a function of two things. It is in those areas of high-end skills, your technicians, your scientists, and your engineers. And it's also a function of the ramp-up of the SKA. The SKA started off as a small project with 7 dishes, and now ramping up to 64 dishes. Therefore, we're looking for more and more people at the high-end skill, which is why our vacancy would be affected largely by those things. But we are concerned about the time it takes to fill those vacancies. And we're trying to find new ways rather than going back to the traditional way of looking for peace. He's beginning to think about using social media targeted to those areas where you find these people. Otherwise, because our experience to date is some of the high-end skilled people do not necessarily go to the Sunday Times. For losing money through the Sunday Times is wasting money and time. Before we're finding new ways by using some of the social media that are targeted at those groups of people. We're hoping those strategies will help reduce the vacancy rate. It's only about 10% of our total establishment, which is not bad, too bad when you look at the national average. Ideally, we want it below 5%. Thank you very much.
I'm not referring to you, but I'm referring from experience here in this committee. We have had a number of excuses that people are not available with the skills. And the HSRC CEO is a good business of mine, where we ended up forming a kind of a task team to help the science system to find suitable people where they said they did not have people who are suitable. We were worried because we had a lot of idling people with PhD from very top universities of the world, not even from here. And that was a bad experience because I had also undergone that experience for 2 years. So I took it my duty that these reasons should now be called away, and we must know exactly, like, people do not hire sometimes because they want to have cushions around them. They want people they feel better with them, whom they know or they have relations with. So it's not necessarily that people are not available. Even now I've got a number of people who have finished in universities like Michigan and so forth, who have ended up being lecturers in technical. Because they can't get the work, you know. So what we did, we just started with 10 CVs of 12 or so. Some of those people were even appointees of the American Cancer Society. They were among the best 10. And they were vegans within the medical research council, and they were geneticists. But then they never got the job. And we went with the HSRC CEO to do that. She had been casting another platform to do that, and she came to me and said, let us do this, bring all the CVs and let's see. We only managed to get one group out of 10. And all those institutions where they had said that they were looking for skills they can't find, they didn't take them, and they didn't give good reasons why. So it became clear that it is a question of comfort zone rather than the shortage of skills. In fact, if you can do a technical audit for skills, you will find that there are so many skills that are lying around, scattered around, doing nothing when we say we don't have the skills. So that's the point that I really do not like to accept here in Parliament now that I am here. You know why I was here? The end is to say we control the Parliament, it's better that you go to Parliament. Because if they don't want you around them, there's nothing we can do. You will have problems when around them. They'll find all other reasons of humanity to say that you are not good. See? So I'm trying to say that the member asked a very important question, and that's a question which remains a problem not for your institution, but for all South Africa. We have a lot of skills that are lying around, and we always keep on saying, and we train a lot more. Let's look at the budget that we have. Look at how many people we produce. But if you can just, we once, as this committee, we once went to 2006, we went to Rhodes University. We found a pile of women finishing PhDs or others, masters, saying that, but why are we being trained? Because your department doesn't absorb us. There are many of our colleagues who have finished, who don't have work now. They've ended up going to work in very remote areas of qualification. You see? And we had a three-hour session with the students at Rhodes University, and we brainstormed everything. So anybody who comes with that argument, I just don't really like to take it.
because it's not the true thing is that people want people who are compatible with around them. That is the bottom line. So I don't want us therefore to deal with, because we won't address the problem if we do not tell the truth about the problem. So I had some questions to ask, but I can't ask them now. But what I want to note from what you have presented is the question of indigenous knowledge system. It is a very important, actually, thing. I am one of the biggest promoters of it here in Parliament since I arrived, from the scientific point of view, because if you understand deep science, then you'll understand that actually the essence of it comes from the indigenous knowledge. So we have gone as far as, if you have heard, establishing a degree, because there has been a BA which was just, sometimes we can do something, explore indigenous cultural things, but it was not indigenous knowledge. But now there are two universities that have been identified, I think from next year, which are going to offer a degree on indigenous knowledge systems from the scientific point of view, not from cultural point of view, from the scientific point of view, which is an applied science, because indigenous knowledge systems are supposed to be an applied science, but they are everywhere. They are in all our lives, from medicine to everything. So that is what I want you to thrust down and see how you can support it, because that's something that is already in place, which is going to happen, I think, first from next year. It's called DIKS, the Degree of Bachelor of Indigenous Knowledge System. So I just wanted to make you aware of that. Other questions, we'll deal with them, because members, if there are any other things which you have some concern with, I am sure many members do have some more other inputs that would have been follow-ups, right, because of the problem of time. But I know today my secretary just showed me that actually you will be coming back to us on the 25th of May, 23rd of May. So members can then at least still bring back some of those inputs that they may wish to bring back. In May we'll be dealing with science awareness. In fact, that's why I wanted to also add a lot of some input to SAFTA. Unfortunately, now I don't, but that time, I think that's a good session for that. Science awareness starts from, actually I wanted to even talk about what you said, that as NRF, you can't just make any success at the far end if you have not prepared yourself in the initial pipeline, which is basic education and all other related. You got it right, but you have solutions, but you have not implemented them. That's a problem. So there's a gap that you need to close down. But I think we can deal with all those issues when we come back on the 23rd of May. Because that is exactly the purpose of the committee. It is to make you, when you go back, you make things that are workable, that are outcome-based, that the society can feel that there is a difference. You know, an organization like yours in Sweden, it's doing a lot. You know, when they were showing us that Sweden is in the map, it's with Ericsson, with Kenya, with Volvo, because of the organization like yours, which is just an organization which is about how to develop science and technology and skill and make them product-based, market them. Then these are some of the things we need to face somewhere we are together. Anyway, as I said, we have overstayed with some few minutes now, but thank you very much. The presentation was quite interesting, as usual. I guess members will make more inputs when you come back again, and we will interact positive. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. May I, be on behalf of thank the honourable member of the TPC and yourself for your suggestion and input as well. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, we will have 5 minutes break so that the other people can come and locate themselves. You see, there's one who is complaining. Are you complaining? What name is it? Eh? Okay, thanks. All right. Yeah.
She's complaining about the sleep. Did you promise her sleep?
No.
I did it just like this, sorry mate.
My cell number is this.
Thank you.
I think members should try and settle down so that we can start. I remember that I think we can start. We are almost 30 minutes late, as I said, in the last session. So we will try to squeeze time for questions so that we are able to try and cover up, probably, or recover some 15 minutes. And let us also welcome the delegation from Asia Southway, the CEO. Actually, I was talking about you just now in the last session because there was a situation where we were talking about vacancies
the skilled people are not available. I said, I can't buy that story because we work with him. And we already know that it's not exactly the reason why there are vacancies in many areas here. But people want to work with people they like, but they want to be cushioned. It's not that skills are not there, they are there. We circulated 10 CVs, we only managed to get one through. So, can't be through what the people are saying. So I just wanted to warn you that if you are come with a judgment, it's not going to materialize. I warn you beforehand, if there is any of your staff who may say okay, thank you very much but for coming. I will, because I knew, I see, I've got new faces here, I've also, there are also some new faces on your side. So, and as a normal habit, then we introduce ourselves to one another. I will start with my desk here, it's myself, Nobody chair, and then, of course, Shanaz Isaacs, the committee secretary, whom you should interact with in case there is anything that you want to inquire about the committee or to inform the committee about. And I've got our researcher there, Renee Osborne Mullins. I always got a double name. I sometimes start with Mullins and end with Osborne, but at least I always find it what is important. Right, and then I have my assistant researcher there, but he's not a permanent assistant researcher. Standard researcher, I mean a secretary. He can introduce himself because his name is, I have memorized it so yet. There was another committee assistant, just out there, so we have two committee assistants. And then I'll allow members to he wants to be the assistant. He wants to hide so that questions are not fired against him. He's from DST, he's not from. Okay. Right, let members introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm a new face from this side of the room. My name is Janita Klausen-Loden, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Sana Plaiti, member of the portfolio committee.
I am Nkenda, member of the portfolio.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Bobby Mujuni, member of the portfolio committee, science and tech. Come from Gauteng province in the region called Greater Tswane.
Good morning. I'm Nkosi Mwela Mongolian, a member of this committee. The Secretary of the African National Congress, the OAC Tambo region, in the UK.
Then I think the ministry, let the ministry introduce themselves also.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I'm Martin Mulcahy, Special Advisor to the Minister of Science and Technology.
Hi, my name is Sagan Moody from the Social Impact Chief Director at CSC.
Good day, my name is Hedin Lipe from CSC Director Capital.
Morning, honorable members. My name is David Makula, and I'm also from the Department of Science and Technology. Morning, Luanda France, Parliament of Relations Office of Ministry.
Can I have
questions
here?
I'll just start with myself and let them say something in case they leave me without saying anything. I'm Dr. Alicia Sana, and I'm the CEO of the University.
I'm Peter Pedder, Deputy CEO of Operations in Japan.
Honorable members, Honorable Chair, I'm Dimitri Labadarios, Executive Director of Population Health, Health Systems and Innovation, HSRC.
Chair, honourable members, the Ministry, my name is Margaret Kipiga Mabogo from Economic Performance and Development, the Executive Director in that unit in the HSR.
Honourable Chair and honourable members, I am an Executive Director in the program called Human and Social Development in the HSRC.
Good morning, honourable Chair and honourable members. My name is Blackness Simbai. I'm the Executive Director in charge of HIV-AIDS, STIs, and TB.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Glenda Cruz. I'm a Research Director in the Education and Skills Development Project.
There may be organizations that have been introduced themselves. Can they also introduce themselves to you?
Thank
you very much for that. I think we can then start because we are a bit behind time. We are supposed to have interacted from 11:30 to 12:30. And then from 12:30, interaction, question time, discussions up to 1 o'clock. But you see, as I was saying, we're almost about 30 minutes late now. So we will try and squeeze, we'll see how, what we can do because we have an EPC at 2. So we can't be later than 1:15 from here. But let's try and see how much we can do.
Honorable Chair, just to find out how many minutes you would like to give me so I can work within the time frame of the
According to this, we're supposed to have 1 hour, but now maybe I can give you 45.
Okay, thank you very much. We will be sharing with you our strategic plan as well as the annual performance plan, you know, for this coming financial year, starting by describing our mission of the HSRC, being a research organization that basically advances social science and humanities, mainly for public use. We operate on the basis of the mandated objectives in the Act that this Parliament passed, that is Excellency in 2008, which requires us to initiate, undertake, and foster strategic basic research and applied research in the area of human sciences. We are also required to conduct research that informs effective policy formulation as well as monitoring and evaluating the policies that are being implemented and the programs that are being implemented. We are required to conduct research that will help in informing public debate by ensuring that we disseminate information that is based on facts arising from the research that we're undertaking. We are also required by the Act to foster and support collaboration and develop networks and have institutional linkages across the science system and across the different stakeholders that we work with. We are required to respond to the needs of the vulnerable and marginalized communities, meaning that the research that we do must actually address the concerns that the public has, particularly those that are vulnerable and are marginalized. And also to develop and make publicly available the data that we have. In other words, we must be able to curate our data so it can be utilized by people beyond the HSRC. We have grouped our strategic objectives that address this the act into what we call ADEPT. In other words, We are supposed to be generating knowledge through institutional collaboration, conducting public dialogue, preparing policy briefs, and publication of our findings. So we're advancing knowledge. That's why we call it AIDS. Secondly, we're supposed to contribute to development and social progress in the rest of the continent as well as in South Africa, but doing so through research that is informed by priorities of government, of civil society, as well as the needs of our communities. So that's why we say it's developmental, you know, in its approach. We are also expected to develop a skilled and capable workforce. So in the field of research that we do, we have to make sure that we do enhance the skills, you know, of people, and we do research that also contributes to enhancement of the skills of people. In addition to that, we are required to preserve and share data with others for further analysis, so that we can be able to maximize the use of information that we have. So that's why we call it preserve. And then transformation here is ready to go on and continue the transformation insofar as both gender as well as race, in terms of ensuring that, you know, we have a representative public service, I mean, a representative, you know, staff, but at the same time, we have staff that are able to look at information from a gender analytical, you know, approach. And finally, that whatever it is we do, we must be able to sustain the organization in terms of financially and, of course, in terms of ensuring we've got human resource capacity to be able to sustain what it is that we do. Based on that broad strategic objective that I've just mentioned, we have done about 150 projects, you know, in the last year, and they cover a number of areas, you know, from science system innovation to poverty to education to human and social advancement to developing skills to crime to early childhood to families to health promotion, health systems, you know, could go on and on, HIV, AIDS, nutrition and food security. So you can see that we cover a very, very broad area insofar as our work, because our work has to do with anything that affects a human being. So it could be something that is totally bio, you know, a technology approach, but dealing with the question of human beings. So I'm just really saying that our work is very, very broad. I'll just pick up a few of those examples for the key projects that we're going to be doing in 2012 and 2013. In the area of the dynamics of human and social behavior, which is the categorization that has been agreed to by the Department of Science and Technology broadly, that, you know, we should be looking at the areas of dynamics of human and social behavior, picked up two big projects that we're doing. They are currently in the field right now. This is the one on HIV prevalence, which is a study that we are collecting data from more than 40,000 people around the country to try to determine the HIV and the health status, you know, of South Africans. The other one that we're doing is the nutrition and examination survey, the health and nutrition examination survey called SANHANES. This is the first big study actually to be done in an African continent, as far as we can tell. It's been done in the U.S. for the last 50 years, and it's only this year in South Africa that we've introduced this particular study that would help us to be able to examine the population to determine the health status in terms of communicable and non-communicable diseases. And we'll be looking at, you know, diabetes, for example, cardiovascular diseases and so forth, hypertension, weight, you know, of the population. For the first time, we'll be able to set some standards for the country in terms of what to expect in this area. Issues of obesity, for example, are going to be addressed in this particular study. Both of these studies are currently in the field, and I'm sure many of you might have had some radio programs or newspaper articles on this particular study. So the results will be released this financial year, and they will make a very big impact. They both have the support of the Department of Health. The next one is the Department on Science, Technology, and Society. We have a big project we're doing on R&D survey and research and development survey, innovation and biotechnology survey. So those are three types of surveys which are funded by the Department of Science and Technology. They've been very supportive, you know, to us to understand the science landscape in the country, the extent to which the country is innovative, and also to look at the status of biotechnology in South Africa in terms of both you know, our capability as a country to be able to do biotechnology studies. So we're very excited at the fact that we've partnered with the Department of Science and Technology. On R&D, they do give us a ring fence, you know, amount every year to be able to do this kind of work. On the next one is on trends in international mathematics and science study. And again, this one is a very good support that we get from the Department of Education. It's an international study that we're participating in. It helps us to compare South Africa with other countries in terms of how we're doing on math and science. And that's what's informing, you know, government in terms of investing in more resources to train South Africans in the area of math and science. We have another area on social cohesion and identity, and here we have a big survey that we do every year, and we will be going to the field towards the end of the year this year, on the South African Social Attitude Survey, where we try to understand the viewpoints of South Africans, the public perceptions of South Africans on a number of issues. One that we'll be probably releasing this year, and we cannot release the results now, is really on public perceptions on nuclear power, you know, in South Africa. So we've been funded by NEXA to be able to do that study, and we've done it, and we'll be able to release the results later on this year. Another key project we're going to be doing is falls under the area of promoting an African research agenda in line with the requirements of our Act, Work in the African Area, in the continental Africa. It's an African Studies Center that we're setting up at the HSRC, which will be able to give us a pan-African view of the continent insofar as a number of issues are concerned in the humanities. It's going to be our strong humanities program, and we are in the process of getting it through the board. The board is busy looking through that. They've made some recommendations and we've made some changes. And this was encouraged by the Minister of Science and Technology that we should actually be undertaking this kind of work, and we've taken on her suggestion. And we are in the process of getting it, you know, off the ground. On skills development, we've got a very large grant that we've been given over a three-year period by the Department of Health and Education. I mean, that Department of Higher Education and Training. My health is showing up. And that particular research project, you know, working with the CSIS, obviously, is really to help us to look at information that would inform government in terms of how to plan for skills in this country. This country does not have as much skills as we may think we have, you know, because there is a mismatch between what is required in the industry and the qualifications of the population. So we are trying by all means with this big project to be able to develop to collect data and be able to give advice to the ministry in terms of how they can really be able to plan skills better in this country. And of course, we'll be working with institutions in order to be able to get to that point. And then the other program that we're having in the HSRC,
including proper deployment.
Including proper deployment. And then there is also the issue of talent management. You know, we've decided that in the HSRC, we have to introduce talent management because we've got some of the most gifted people, highly talented people in the organization who we may not even be aware of. So we've given this program to our deputy CEO here to actually work on a program to identify people that are really talented and then start having a succession planning, even if we have to fast-track, you know, the movement of those people along the hierarchy, just to make sure that we do have really qualified people. Sometimes we go looking outside when actually we should be looking inside and picking up those that are highly qualified and make sure that they actually move up the ladder and take on the reins. The other projects that we're going to be doing are in the area of economic development, and the first one is focusing on agrarian reform. We have a challenge in the country insofar as agriculture is concerned. Any one of you driving around the country will be able to see that there is a challenge. There are so many farms that are actually not even being utilized, and yet people are hungry, people are without jobs. So there is a study that we're going to be doing in the HSRC this year to assess the impact of agrarian reform policy on poverty and the effect of the availability of agricultural land and development support. So hopefully we can be able to conduct a study in this area of agrarian reform. The next one really is to look at innovation. We've looked at innovation in the country, mostly in the urban areas. Very little work has actually been done to look at innovation in the rural areas. With the support of the Department of Science and Technology, we are going to be introducing a project that will help us to develop a rural innovation assessment tool. And we are going to do so by drawing lessons and experience from earlier innovation assessment tools that have been used, and then try to apply it in our rural municipalities to see how that is actually going to work out. And this might actually be something that we should be considering for intellectual property side from the DST side, because it's an important new development. The other area that we're going to be looking at arises from the problem of global warming. Everyone around the world is concerned about this issue of global warming. And you have seen even in the new infrastructure development plan that the president has actually announced that there is an issue of the green economy, that we need to be creating some green jobs. So we will be conducting some studies on green economy and resilient cities, you know, trying to combine environmental and economic development and seeing whether can we green the growth that we're having while cutting poverty and creating more resilient cities. In terms of performance, and I'll go very briefly to say that this is still preliminary. With the fourth quarter of the year, we had 69 targets for the whole year, and on the fourth quarter, we had achieved more than 75%, you know, of the targets. In the area of advancing knowledge, we had achieved 11, and 3 were not achieved. And some of those that we say we've achieved have actually exceeded, you know, those targets. But I'll just leave it at that. It will be coming out in the annual report. That's where I'll be giving more details on each one of those things. In the area of developing our science, our system, out of the 30 that we have, out of the 40 that we targeted to achieve, 30 have been achieved and 10 have not been achieved. This is a new area altogether. These indicators are new. So the organization is still learning on how to actually do this. And I do believe that 10 out of 40 that have not been achieved is minute, you know, given the fact that this is a new area. Enhancing our knowledge and capacities and all that, we have done exceptionally well there. 3, you know, have been achieved, 1 not. On preserving data sets, which is something that is very new, that has come in with the new legislation, as I've indicated, we far exceeded the target. We achieved 19, and the target was 14. And on transformation, we've achieved, out of the 5, we've achieved 4. And then out of sustainability, of the 5, you know, targets, we've actually achieved, you know, 4. So overall, you know, HSRC has done very well. And I'll just take you through some of the sentinel ones that might be critical. But just want to say, the first one that I want to talk about is the fact that we do generate knowledge that actually goes, you know, further. There are a number of journal articles that we are sending out, we're publishing. There are a number of books that we're publishing, and I'll come back to the exact numbers. But just this is just an example of the kind of work that we actually do. When you look at the performance for 2011 and 2012, if you look at it at the end of March 2012, you can see that in terms of those peer-reviewed journal articles, an example that I've just shown you, we've actually exceeded the target. We've expected that each scientist, senior scientists, will publish about an average 1.5 journal articles in internationally accredited journals, not just journals that, you know, are amongst our friends where we can be able to influence each other, but these are peer-reviewed, that international, people that don't even know us. We've done exceptionally well because we've got to 1.7, and that is not easy to get. The next one is really books. We said that in the first year, because we're introducing this new indicator, we would produce 2 books that are recognized, that are peer-reviewed. We actually produced, you know, 4 books, twice as much. And then in terms of recognized book chapters, we expected that we would produce 10 of them. We've actually produced 20, you know, book chapters. And then in terms of policy briefs, which is a new area for us now, to really take the knowledge that we have and start breaking it down into a policy recommendation so that it's evidence-based, and then we're able to feed to policymakers. We said we're going to do 6 of them, and we actually did manage to get 6 of them. Next year, the target is going to be much higher for us because now we know how to do it. it had to require us bringing in experts who know how to write policy briefs to come and train our staff, and they had to revise them as many times as they can to be able to make sure that they indeed were policy briefs and not research briefs, and they've done very well. And then we come into the area of training, of capacity development, human development. We expected that we would have 34 master's interns that are trained at the HSRC. We've actually exceeded that target because we've got about 38 of them by end of the fourth quarter. With respect to PhD interns, we actually have taken more doctoral interns than we had planned. You know, from 25 that we targeted, we are at 38, and that's very good. Where we had difficulties were in the area of postdocs. And here we have 22 that we had expected to enroll at the HSRC. We only managed 17. Part of that is a problem related to, you know, specific areas like economists who don't want to come in for lower salaries. They are snapped up as soon as they finish their doctorate. But we do have some strategies in terms of how we can improve this by making sure that those people who are registered for a PhD, as soon as they finish, we grab them and keep them into the HSRC for a while. We hope this strategy will work. It remains to be seen as to how effective that is going to be in some of the areas. The other thing that we try to do is to really link up with the Africans in other parts of the continent. And we said to ourselves, we're going to recruit 7 African research fellows into the HSRC. We've been able to recruit, you know, those 7, meaning that we've got linkages with other 7 other African countries, and we can be able to do some work with them on research. Coming into the next one that has to do with African senior researchers, here is where we have been struggling with this indicator for many, many years, and we're always very close, but we're never there. I mean, and I'll always count it as we never made it, even if we're that close. But we've been working very, very hard to hire more senior Africans, you know, in the organization. Even though the HSRC is predominantly African, we still do not have as many senior African researchers at the top like we'd like to have them. So we still continue to work very hard. The target was 48%, and we're only at 44%. So we missed it by 4%, and we'll continue to work harder to make sure that one day we do meet, one year we actually do meet this target. And the next one is extra parliamentary funding. This talks to the question of sustainability. We know that the government will never be able to give us all the money that we may require. No one ever gets what it is that they need. But we work harder to keep pushing the Department of Science and Technology, and they've come to the party, very much so. So on the extra parliamentary funding, you notice that we're supposed to get, we're budgeted to get 46%, and we've been able to get 47%, not too far from where we had agreed with them in terms of the shareholder compact, in terms of where we should be. So we're pleased with the fact that, you know, there is actually that we have actually reached that target, and the department has come to the party with regard to the funding overall. And then the next one is on multi-year grants. On multi-year grants, you know, this is where we look at the contracts that are for 3 years or longer at the HSRC. I'm pleased to say that we are not too far off. We have actually, you know, succeeded. Last year, the situation was not so good because of the global economic crisis. I must say we've really succeeded. In fact, as you see with the budget when, you know, it comes into present, this is the highest amount that we actually have received in the history of the HSRC in terms of funding. And we appreciate the support from the Department of Science and Technology on that. On the seminars that we are supposed to conduct at the HSRC, and again, this is something that the Department of Science and Technology supports us so that we are able to take the information and make it, process it, and make sure that the policymakers can actually engage. We've been able to succeed on that because, I mean, we've not been able to succeed on all of them. You know, we're supposed to do 8 of them. We succeeded on 5. And the reason why it's 5 is because the reports are not completed yet. You know, so that we did not get around to this one as much as we have wanted to. And then on the preserved data set, as indicated earlier on, that we, the target was 14 and we have reached 19. And finally, in terms of collaboration, which is required by the Act, that we collaborate with other institutions, as I've indicated earlier on, we were supposed to have a target of 6 memorandum of understanding with different institutions. so that we can collaborate, share information, exchange faculty, and, you know, do work, you know, joint work together. We actually have 25 memorandum of understanding with a number of organizations. Some of them are domestic, some of them are international. So there's quite a lot of activity of the HSRC working closely with other institutions. On the budget, I'm going to have Peter, our Deputy CEO and a CFO, to actually go through the budget as quickly as possible.
Thank you, CEO. Honorable members, honorable chair, I'm just going to talk very briefly on the draft financial statements, then I'll focus a bit more on the budget side, and then I'll share a bit about the challenges that we're experiencing in the HSRC as well. As far as the financial information is concerned, currently these are the draft financial statements, so they're very early days. We have just closed up the financial year, and we are busy still reconciling all the information, so it's not audited, and of course we haven't presented it to DST, so I just want to inform you first of all about that. However, having said that, there's also information that's quite valuable here, and as you can see, we compare the current financial year, the 31st of March closing 2012 compared to 2011. And in there, you can see that the parliamentary grant we have achieved, our target, of course, got all the money from DST that they promised us. The external income target substantially achieved on that one as well. Although that number is 98%, the anticipated income is actually way more than that, but it's in the coming years. So that's where the sustainability that the CEO is talking about is going to be very useful, because we already have money in the bag for the next financial year from external income. And of course, the other income target that we have achieved, that is 158%. Substantially more than what we had budgeted for. And actual expenditure was a budgeted cost. We try to contain our actual expenditures, and it's slightly more than the budgeted cost, but of course we have also overachieved on our total revenue target. So that's the factor of the overachievement on the revenue target. We budgeted to achieve 336 million, and we achieved more than that, roughly about just over 340 million for the year. But as I indicated earlier, my disclaimer was that these are non-audited. So I'm at this stage focusing too much on it, if you can just move on. As far as the budget for this financial year is concerned, we have our income target now is a bit more than the previous financial year. Last year it was 336 million, and this year it is 360 million. The parliamentary grant, that is minus the VAT, in case you wonder why it looks so odd, it's 187 million for the year. And our research income, we have budgeted 147 million. The other income, that's the income from rental, income from our cafeteria sales, etc., it's about 25 million. So in total, this will give us our revenue target of 360 million. You'll see that we spend a substantial amount of that on salaries. If you just compare the parliamentary grant out on 88 million rand, the salaries component of the HRC is 183 million. Then, of course, we also have our overheads that we have to look at, and that's about 27 million, and the projected research-related expenses, that's about 131 million. So we're not budgeting to have a surplus or a deficit. CFMA prevents us from budgeting for a deficit. At the end of the next financial year, we're hoping to have a slight, to break even, basically. Then, of course, the budget, the ratio there, very important to look at. What I just want to emphasize here is really the second bullet point from the bottom, the ratio between parliamentary grants and the total external income. You'll see that the parliamentary grant is exceeding our external income, and we are very grateful today to the Department of Science and Technology for coming to the party and funding us to that extent. Government is really assisting us a great deal. And, of course, direct staff costs as a percentage of total expenses, 31%. A lot of money is spent on staff. And in the next slide, we'll focus a bit more on some of the challenges there. You'll notice that as part of also of our environment that we're operating in. We try to have as a conducive environment for all of us, the staff and so forth. But we are having problems in terms of refurbishing the building, buying capital expenditure, new IT infrastructure. And so it is, at the moment, we're making do, but it's not entirely optimal as it is. In terms of budgeting for performance targets, we are limited in terms of how much we can give our staff and put the performance target that's very competitive. The CEO indicated earlier about the challenges we have of attracting certain categories of staff. It's a very small pool out there of knowledge workers, and we compete in the open market for those skills. We would like to have to be the knowledge hub for the dissemination of information, but that requires money, investment in IT infrastructure, once again, and we simply don't have the finance at the moment to for that. Longitudinal studies, we are hoping to focus a bit more on that because that is going to help us with our sustainability if we can do more longitudinal studies and then bring funds in to be in exactly of the same period of time that we're doing the studies. So matching our income with our expenses over a longer period of time. Future growth is, of course, dependent on how the growth in the parliamentary grant is going. That is growing mainly at the inflation rate at the moment. Then, of course, our salary absorbs about 97% of the parliamentary grant. I showed you earlier, it's about 183 million salary cost versus the 188 million that you're getting from the DST. And, of course, cash flow is constantly under pressure, but I must admit, the past financial year has not been as taxing as the previous financial year because we did get quite a number of projects, funding from government. The CEO spoke about the Department for Education and Training project that we landed. That was about $5 million over 3 years. And, of course, there's quite a few other projects as well that we got in. So cash flow has not been that problematic, but it's something that we have to constantly watch. So austerity measures are the order of the day in the organization. And I think that's all that I wanted to say.
Well, finally, I just want to say... Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, to say that we appreciate all the assistance that we've obtained, you know, starting from the Minister, the Deputy Minister, the Department, you know, Science and Technology, the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology with your oversight responsibilities. You know, the Chair has been very supportive and members also have been very supportive in asking questions that helped us to go back and try always to improve. And other government departments have also come to the party to assist us in terms of, financing some of the big projects that we had to do. Our board has been very, very helpful. I must say I'm very proud to work for the HSRC with a board that understands its role as that of being strategic and leading management to actually do their work. It's my sixth year as the CEO of the HSRC, and I have to say that I have an excellent board, and I'm, you know, with the members there. And the committees that we work with them, you know, it's been actually working very nicely. And also thank our funding agencies that have come to the party with the money, and the staff of the HSRC who have been working tirelessly to make sure that the HSRC is a successful organization. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I'm off in the quick. I can't say it is important. Okay, I'll allow the members to interact with you during the interest of time. Honourable members, there you are.
Chair.
Honourable Mokonyan.
Chair, thank you.
Shumi. Plaji. Laura.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Doctor, and the team for the wonderful presentation. And I'm very, very excited about target. Meet and you think. Wow, thank you very much for that. But there's only one question. The 97% which is utilized for salary. Which means therefore that the money that we once devoted is for salary. Can you explain why there is that? That's one question I have.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, this is clarity. The CEO mentioned that the council has a 25 memoranda of understanding, and according to the EME that I have before me, it says 20. So I'm not sure of which information is correct. So I need to be clarified on that. Still on that, Chairperson, what has been said here is that much as they would want to have this collaboration, but there is no money that is being allocated, or that there are financial constraints for the council to be able to implement their objectives. So what I would like to find out is what is it that is being done to ensure that these objectives are being implemented, since they want to do this, but they are financial constraints. There's no budget allocated for that because of these financial constraints. The other one, Chairperson, is with regard to, I'm not sure where that side I tried to note, but with regard to the leasing of office spaces, what I would like to find out is how many office spaces has the council leased, and what is the cost of these leases or these buildings. The other one, Chairperson, sorry. In the current, I'm so sorry. The current strategic plan does not contain the 2010 the council institutional review, as it was stated on page 42, annexure A. What I would like to find out is whether this is an oversight on the council or not. The next question, which is the last one, what interim measures have been put in place to deal with the infrastructure requirements that have not been funded in this current financial year? Thanks.
Next one.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, mine is on the project, the key projects that are indicated on page 7. The existing ones, is they are, where are they located? And the second one is on page 8, the agri reform. Last week, Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, we attended a briefing in terms of the climate change. There was something that was raised by one of the presenters, which was like a light that was switched on by most of us who were there. The issue on the soil scientists. We only realized that, for me it was my first time that I heard about something like that. Do we have people like this? Because the presenter mentioned that even at a university level, Zealand as students who are studying on that field. So I want to know from the institution, maybe, do you sometimes have talks about that or an idea of something like that? But according to that information, it's something that we need as a country. Now, I was going through this this agri-reform stuff, and that comes to my mind that that issue can fit in terms of the agricultural stuff. Thank you.
Let me just augment your point. Because I was there. This is one professor from Stellenbosch University. He was part of the presenters for the Rio Plus 20 conference in June. And he mentioned very interesting things, the research they've done. One of the things he identified, there was a serious lack, even in the South African focus, of studying, studying and analyzing our soil. And our soil, actually, he was saying that our soil is everything about us. It is about it is a reflection even of climate changes. It is a reflection of our wealth. It is everything. So, for as long as we have not analyzed and studied our soil, we are just working from nowhere, from no basis. So, he then showed the statistics of what they have done in showing a very big disparity in terms of us, the climate change, and the understanding of the soil. And so I was saying that, and if he gave a statistic even of going to universities, that none of the universities have even a focus on soil. And I think this is what she's referring to. I remember what professor, what his name is, I don't know his classification, but I know him because he always is in this kind of environmentally oriented conference. Yeah. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you, Chief. My background is in education, so I'm going to ask two similar questions that I've asked during the previous presentation. I was privileged to be part of both basic and higher education portfolio committees, and I see this portfolio as an extension of the two education portfolios. Our minister used to be the Minister of Education, and if you have a look at all the portfolios in internationally on education, it very often includes science and technology. So my particular interest is in what you are doing in the field of education. Now, we all know that education is currently burdened with many challenges, and we also know that the state of affairs in different provinces, some of the provinces, is desperate. You've touched on education on different slides. For instance, your second slide of numbers, then your slides aren't numbers, but when you dealt with the mandated objectives, where does education fit in that slide or on that slide? You also mentioned the 150 products, and then the third bullet, quality of education. Now, how do you focus on education? Should I direct it? Is it Ms. Linda? What I would like to know is, were you in some way involved in the previous dispensation, the OBE dispensation, and also the current dispensation referred to as the new CAPS documents? Did you evaluate them? On the fifth slide, You mentioned science, technology, and society, and you mentioned the TIMSS survey. What I would like to know is, do you still have an item bank at the HSRC with a system that is used to monitor the standard of subjects presented in our schools? On your sixth slide, you've mentioned, yes,
the Skills Development Project, is that the same one that the National Research Foundation also mentioned earlier this morning? Because if I understand you correctly, you refer to info and how you gather info and how to and you give advice as to how to plan for skills development. This is, as I see it or understand it, it's kind of a curriculum development. Am I correct? And now I would refer to the same conference last week regarding the visit to Rio. 8 portfolios will be attending that conference. And Ms. Sonjika referred to the necessity of curriculum planning regarding the green economy, sustainable development, global warming. So what I'm asking actually is, is the HSRC in some way involved in curriculum planning, or how do you cooperate with the education departments? Thank you.
Either way, Dr. Clopper Lawrence has made a question to you. He has asked our committee. So he has made a question to you. But it's not a speech, so it's a question. So I accept. I wanted to alert them that they must treat you with care because it's a maiden question.
I have other questions, but I won't do it to you.
Okay, thank you very much for those questions. I just wanted to check. I have just a few, about 3 questions probably. I like the survey that we have been touched with on nuclear perception. Because we underwent a study in Sweden, a study tour in Sweden, where, if you remember, there was a time when there was a referendum on nuclear technology program, where the society voted against 80%, and so they had to stop their nuclear program in Sweden. But when we visited Sweden, I think in 2006 with this committee, we found, they said that what they did over the years, they decided to study the public perception on anything, but in particular on nuclear power. And they found that actually they had not done a lot. And in fact, they came to the conclusion that they needed to have a fully-fledged a unit in the university that was going to be studied with and fit with the government. And they, when we came there, they said this study has so much helped that now, having addressed the questions of public perception, which can really bring the world to a halt for all reasons, they have found that now, because public understand, they have in 2 cities, we're now competing to host the nuclear power, nuclear power stations, and actually the nuclear power program has now been resuscitated, and the public now wanted that nuclear power can continue. Very interesting. So it's just a comment that this is a very important study you have to do. The next question is the international study on mathematics. The survey on which I'm interested, mathematics, something like that. Yeah. Even that one is very, very important. I was recently in the Netherlands, and in the Netherlands, they also want to work with some people in South Africa on this topic. So I think we can discuss later about it. The last one was, of course, the mismatch in skills deployment. I think you must make a very, very valid recommendation there, because our experience tells us that although a shortage of skills in South Africa, but some skills are short because they are mismatched. They are improperly deployed. and that can contribute a lot more impact, social and economic impact, because if we talk about a skill, you only need one skilled person in a municipality to deal with the construction, and then the whole construction in that region is correct. So you don't need millions of them. You only need one person to take the whole world into the moon. You will come with ideas how to move people from here to the moon. So it's very important. One skill loss, one skill person loss, is a very big social impact. It's very important. I just want to make a comment.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Member, for excellent questions that you've asked. Starting with the first one, I'm going to share the questions with our colleagues here, and on the financial issues, I would defer to the CFO, and then on the issues related to education, I'll defer to Dr. Linda Cruz. On the salary, I just want to say that we took a strategic decision to keep scientists at the HSRC and even give them permanent posts as opposed to contracts in order to strengthen the capacity of the HSRC in the long term to deliver on the objectives that are set up in the Act. For that reason, we decided to use parliamentary grants for salaries, you know, of our staff, and then we go out to apply for funding externally to be able to do research. So our research funds come in from non-parliamentary grants most of the time. That doesn't mean that money coming from the Department of Science and Technology or from the Department of Education or from Department of Health is actually not used for project funds. It is used for project funds, but it's augmented with international and domestic funding. In fact, the international funds, you know, I think it's about 98% of our external, 98 million rand of our external funding actually comes from international sources. And that money actually goes largely to projects. And in the projects themselves, Chairperson, I want to say this, we have in the HSRC more than 1,500 staff that we're hiring with this project fund. So while our EME can show that we have about 500 staff members, we actually have about 2,000, slightly more than 2,000 staff members. The rest of the jobs that we create them with the money that we actually get from this project-related fund. They just are there for temporary purposes as opposed to the ones that 500 that are permanent. The next question that was asked about the MOU and the EME. What we have in the ENE of 20 is actually the target for 2012 to 2013. What we reported is actually the achievements that we have in 2011 to 2012. So we have actually succeeded in getting more collaboration, meaning that when it comes to the ENE this year, we already would have exceeded, you know, our targets if we continue with our relationships, you know, that we already have through those MOUs. And then the other issue you raised about no money to implement the objectives, I think you'll be able to answer this one particular, and also the issue of the lease and the infrastructure. Maybe you touch on those. And then let me go further to say something about the comments that the chair actually made before we have someone else come in. On the questions related to media perception, I think we'll be interested in talking with you on that issue as we get that report, you know, finalized, to listen to some of the experiences that you have so clearly articulated with regard to Sweden. And of course, we can also share with you the experience of Germany, where they've actually decided to go against nuclear energy simply because of the public perception that they actually had. So they are not going for nuclear power. And of course, the influence of Fukushima, you know, also becomes very important, you know, in this debate. And then on the teams, yes, again, we should be able to talk with you on that one, because it is something that is of interest, you know, beyond, you know, our borders. The issue of the mismatch of skills I would want Glenda to also address, you know, that particular issue. May I have the Deputy CEO go on the finances, and then we'll go back to Glenda in the context.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Shintana. The financial constraints question, as far as meeting our objectives are concerned, we have actually budgeted for all our objectives. We grouped them together in our annual performance plan that we have submitted to GST, and it is very well documented. I'm not sure if you've got a copy of that, but it's on page 40, where all our costs are documented, because our objectives that we have set, they have to satisfy the SMART principle. So it's not just a case of setting the objectives, but also to allocate the funding for them. And hence, we have, of course, obtained the advice to the Auditor General and to make sure that we set our objectives properly, that they are realistic and measurable, and of course, the budget for that. We did lease offices. We own the building in Pretoria. And of course, we also sublet the building, so that's one of the areas where we get external income and, from. And the building in Cape Town, we are leasing that just across the road here. And we also lease a building in Durban, and we lease a building in Pietermaritzburg, and a small building in Port Elizabeth. So those are the areas where we have leases. But the leases, amounting to roughly about 2 million rand over the an annual year. And we've got, if you want further breakdown, you can certainly supply the detailed amount and who our landlords are and so forth. Although we also put that information in our annual report, so the detailed information is definitely available. To meet our infrastructure requirements, yes. It is an area that we have highlighted as a challenge. So that's why we have to be very careful how we use our money. The income that we are getting from leasing a portion of our buildings, for example, in Pretoria, which we are leasing to the Department of Public Works, we use that money in order to refurbish the building, and so we plow back just about all the money back into the building to maintain it. It's not in use of the of building. So yes, the maintenance cost is quite high. So we do make sure that we budget annually sufficiently. For example, as a result of the frequent electricity problems that we've been experiencing in Shawnee, we discovered that our generator had to be replaced because it just wasn't able to cope with the demand placed on it. So fortunately, we could buy a new generator, and of course, for example, a case in point where we are putting the money back into the building and making sure that we maintain the infrastructure. So essentially, the maintenance of infrastructure is important, but we just flag that as an ongoing challenge. I probably have covered most of that. The CEO spoke about 97% of parliamentary grant for the salaries, and it's important that we have to constantly generate external income to make sure that we can achieve the objectives that we've set out in terms of the various research projects that we have. So we have to make sure that we constantly check the funders. And yes, government gives a large portion of the funding off project as well. That doesn't fund the salaries, that funds the project as well, if they're not non-parliamentary funding. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, can I just clarify one thing? The 2 million that's been referred to for the lease is only on one site. So the other site, you know, the amount is more. I think we should submit to you in writing the amount that is actually being spent on leases. And I can assure you we negotiate very, very hard, you know, with the people that we lease from to make sure that the prices are affordable, because we have to generate that income. Dr. Cruz, and then thereafter Dr. Margaret Chitiga, to give you the issue of the projects that they've raised.
Okay, thank you. you. Thanks for your question, Honourable Member. And I think the core lies in your question, how do we cooperate with the department? And historically, I would say that in our basic research and in our applied research, we have always worked very much in the direct response to the department and often in partnership. For example, on OBE and curriculum, one of our members is currently seconded as an advisor to the Minister of Basic Education and has been very involved in curriculum work. We've recently completed a number of projects around assessment, one of which called PAMI was a large-scale multi-year project with a number of partners funded by the Royal Netherlands Embassy, in which we developed computer-based software to assist teachers in setting test and assessment exercises and in recording marks and in tracking students. And attached to that is an implementation process to roll it out to schools and work with teachers in using this TAMI IT system. And we have also been conducting a number of the annual national assessments on behalf in partnership with the Department of Basic Education and the kinds of assessments like the TIMI and so on. We also have conducted a number of smaller and more qualitative projects on teacher education over the years, some large, and quite a number of projects on the quality of teaching and learning that I think addresses the kind of work we do. With regard to our new partnership with the Department of Higher Education and Training, that is quite unique. It is to provide direct support to the Minister's performance agreement with the Presidency, particularly an agreement 5.1, which has become the Bible for our research team, which aims to develop a credible institutional mechanism for skills planning. And we have recently, the project is very new, we've only begun it in February, so we're developing our approach, but there are a couple of principles. And that is what we are trying to do is assist and support the department in setting up a data architecture, in establishing national data sets for monitoring and evaluating skills development. We are trying to develop frameworks for skills planning and skills forecasting. We're trying to work with CETAs to develop templates that will guide their work in understanding skills demand. A second very important principle is that the HSRC is coordinating this, is working with universities, with research, other research organizations, and with stakeholders. The third key point about that project is we're working with a distinction between labor market information, which is the basic monitoring and evaluation information that you need, and labor market intelligence, where you're analyzing specific skills needs in an area like soil scientists or nuclear scientists. And we have done quite a lot of smaller scale projects in the past. For example, a couple of years ago, we did basic research to inform the human resource needs for the SKA in the planning stages of the SKA. We've been involved with regional, provincial governments on HRD strategies and so on to try and assess skills needs. But in this project, we are drawing on that experience and trying to work towards institutionalizing approaches and frameworks and data sets.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. Thank you for your question on the agrarian reform and the issue about soil science within the HSRC. Actually, the agrarian reform project that was mentioned, as well as the rural innovation assessment tools, are projects that are really starting to look at the grassroots level in terms of agriculture to understand what it is that is happening at the grassroots level. What is the innovation from the point of view of the farmer himself or herself? And especially as well to understand what is assistance agricultural households need after a land reform process, for example. So we hope to uncover all these questions and issues, particularly in terms of the challenges that the households are facing. And obviously we would also come across issues of soil and how they understand the soil. And if there are, from their point of view as well, any innovations on their part. So it's more a survey from a survey perspective that we are going to the rural households to understand them. Our team, which is in economic performance and development, are not soil scientists themselves. We are agricultural economists who are going to go there together with others that are assisting us with the survey. So we're not working from the soil point of view, but gathering information that would allow us to know more about the challenges that are facing farmers as a rural household.
I just remembered the name of the professor. He is Professor Mark Swin. And he is also, if I'm not mistaken, he is a sociologist. He's not a soil scientist. He's a sociologist. Yeah. So I think it would be useful to identify but he gave a brilliant analysis of something.
Chairperson, I just wanted to say members still have any questions, we'd like to answer them, and alternatively we can, you know, write down and send information in the event that your time doesn't allow. But I wanted to say that the slides that we sent actually are numbered. I'm not so sure what happened, but they are actually numbered, each case.
Yeah, they are numbered.
Mine isn't numbered.
Oh.
Only one page, and it's page 17.
At the top.
Oh, you know the staple we use.
Because I thought that they are numbered.
Thanks.
I thought that it was the one reject, maybe, of the one thing. In a factory, they always reject, so you must know. Right. I think that's it. But I am interested in all your surveys that you're going to undertake. One of the lacking things in the South African, especially skills development or career development, is career guidance. So, and we are preparing a week, I'm not sure how many know about it, but there is Moses Kotane Institute in Durban. We are preparing a certain week which will include wood and other things. There will be different speakers, and one of the things we'd like to have is a person who will talk about career guidance versus skills development. From issues of if you can start working on that, I will give you the details. Otherwise, thank you very much for the good presentation. I know I hardly waste time on hosting you because your friends are straight to the point. And members also get exactly what they want to hear. And I'm happy that we have been able to meet the time, actually. You know, it's only 13:08 after having done all the presentation and interaction to the fullest. So thank you very much, and we will meet in due course. I don't know when, but I wish you a good weekend, long weekend. If you have a long weekend, I don't know whether you're working on Monday or not, but if you have a long weekend, have a good weekend and a good trip back, we'll meet next when we come here. Honourable members, I think we can remain a bit here. I just want to make a short, quick announcement about our international tour.
I think it's a little bit of
Okay, thank you.
Let's quickly go through that before having a sitting of the next. I am sure the committee secretary has circulated to you some response on the, or some efforts that are being done on the focus of the international. But what I wanted to just say to you was that there was a suggestion which was actually advanced last week, because now we have seen in that note, I'm sure we've seen the specific affairs via Bulgaria and direct to Seoul. But also we have had a problem that Seoul is not available in our prescribed July period. So the other period that we have is September. And so what we wanted now, we wanted that we do not create a technical difficulty for ourselves where we can, because why we did not go in January, it was at the end, one of the reasons was that our slot was in any event July. It was just a privileged slot January, so we can't even question. You know. Now, they may still utilize that reason if we did not go in July and say that, well, we did allow you to go in July, but unfortunately your Koreans were not available, and now unfortunately Parliament is busy, you can no longer go. So that's the thing that we thought we must look into here and agree. Because we don't want to create a loophole now where they can say that you knew very well the slot was in July. It was in July because we knew as Parliament that otherwise it will be busy throughout the other period. So if Koreans are not available, so it's not our problem. You see, you should have gone to another place because we did allow you to choose another place other than Korea. You see. Because that's what they said. So we have to be very careful about that. So I was thinking, therefore, that meanwhile, Shanaz must also work towards the other alternative, which was China for July. You see? Or even Bulgaria, for that matter, for which is already has invited us, because the Koreans are not still available in our period. And if we say September, we may have problems. But we also have said we need to go and discuss with the House Chair whether if, since Koreans are not available in July, if we can still utilize the committee period, which is now falling in September. But usually, why I'm afraid of September is because September is the time for the annual report. They start around that time on a report to be brought to Parliament. They may say that, you know, at this period you must be preparing for annual reports and so forth. You are sort of in July, and so it's not a problem. But that's how I wanted that we brainstorm that and we agree what we do, because my feeling, you know, at the time when we had discussed with the house chair like this, not this one, the other one before. And we had to call him to the committee to explain why he had not authorized our trip to Sweden. Because he had kept on giving all the reasons like it has happened with us now. But at the end, he simply said he was still applying his mind, and he ended up not applying his mind. So we ended up not going for the 3 years. And that time we were invited, like in Buraway, we were invited by a committee of parliament there. Even the ambassador to Sweden had to come and say, and tell us that if you don't go now, there's going to be an election, and the committee that visited you is likely to change. And you have to go now. If there's anything, I can write a letter to the speaker so that you are facilitated, because these members, they are very worried that you must come before they leave office. And we asked him to do that. He did that. The letter, we made a motivation, and then the house said that he was still applying his mind, and he never applied his mind until his term lapsed, until the Swedish election went on. Until we decided, after 3 years, then the committee decided that let's go to the speaker. So we went to the speaker. The speaker told us that no, he told us, the house said that, You are a big delegation of 17 people, which is going to cost Parliament more than 2 million. The House Chair was absolutely misleading the Speaker, because he had all the things, and the figures were only 700,000. And members were not 17, we only 7 were going. And so then he was called after that. And then he said, no, he said the problem was that the secretary had not followed. Then he came with a booklet about rules and regulations. He said, this is where the secretary, this is the clause here, the secretary did not address this clause, and that's why I did not allow you to go. Then he said, but why did you not tell us that it is that clause which we were supposed to address? He said, no, the secretary was supposed to know this. Then we said, now, can we correct that and go? He said, of course. And then we corrected that clause. I think it was something. Then we submitted it. He again declined. We asked, why did you decline now? He said that this is, now the date is different. This application was for the other date, you know. So, and that's why I'm talking about the technicalities that they create. So I'm saying, let us be aware of all technicalities that can happen, and let us not allow them to be in this, you see. And you know very well how much we have fought even to be allowed to go now. So if we can miss this lot, they may find a reason to say that. Therefore, September period is not a period for travel, because it's about annual reports. Annual reports by rule are supposed to be in from August. And they say that we must be studying annual reports instead of going and so forth. So that's why I was saying that we must be careful about missing this lot. Because actually one of the conditions I said was that we can go to another country if we go on this lot without having to do any new application, but only to get the new prices. And so we have to then think very, very carefully whether we want to wait and go to Korea in September, where we may not go anywhere. So that's what I was trying to propose to you, that we must take a decision. The best decision is that it should be July, because any other, I'm very afraid about September, because I know how they behave in that office. And the best thing we could do was simply to go, because the easiest thing now to do is to simply go to Bulgaria and spend all that period there. But although, of course, the problem is that we needed to go to an area where the department has got working relations. Now, that's why I wanted to go as via, because the ambassador has invited us for those celebrations. So I want us to be together, because I don't want at the end when things go wrong that I am to answer. There is a researcher asking to say something.
Okay,
It's a micro.
Chairperson, I just had a very quick chat with Professor, with Dr. Alsterheider, because he was former DDG for International Cooperation and Relations. And South Africa doesn't really have anything in terms of science and technology cooperation with Bulgaria. And they are also not a country that they are looking at in terms of relations or cooperation at all. So strategically, they're not really on the map in terms, you know, for us, if we are looking for science and technology things to do there.
No, we're not. They in Bulgaria were invited by the ambassador. That's why we made it a passing trip, you see. Our focus was Seoul and China in terms of cooperation. Now, what I was saying is that with the possibilities of competitions for September, it's better that we prepare China for the July slot as via Bulgaria still. Yeah.
I've had my hands up for...
No, I didn't see it. Okay. That is me. I was not expecting you. Once I saw it, I pointed you.
Okay, before you get to the channel. Okay, thanks, Chairperson. What I was going to maybe suggest, Chairperson, after your briefing was maybe that before we can deliberate more on this, we should hear from the Secretary how far has she gone, so that when we try and decide, we should decide on informed, we should make an informed decision.
But it was circulated, that paper is how far the Secretary has gone, the one that I have circulated. Did you get it? Or you haven't read it?
I've got it, but you know, it's a person reading and hearing. I'm reading, this is not detailed, just figures. For instance, I have here hotel cost Bulgaria, 3,94,500. And I'm not sure whether this 94,500, does it include, where does this thing come in, South Korea accommodation, such things?
Yeah, but I understand that one. But you see, for now, I am myself, I'm simply raising a technicality of the period. Because that, the all letters that you want, the years of is based on the July, on the September thing. Because July thing, they've already said that they are not available in July. So that's why I'm saying, therefore, that before we touch the secretary or we get into detail, we must agree that do we want to try this September for Korea, or we want to altogether start exploring China, and therefore looking and then instructing the secretary all what we want, the details that she must give us, all the details about China and Bulgaria, instead of China and so on, in July.
Sorry, Kay, the letter that I've written, I thought was the feeling of the meeting that was last week, that we explore this and give the difference in finance for Mr. Solly to consider after there had been discussion with Mr. Solly. That's the one thing. The second thing about September, the one week that they give us is like a committee week. The second week, when we come back after that constituency period in September, the other committee week is just for BRRR. They won't be allowed to go for the either period for that, and that is actually October, as I see from my program. NA committees, 9 to 19 October, BRR reports, that's when we deal with that's the annual report period. So the one that I see 4 to 7 September is just committee. That's the one thing that you should bear in mind. The other thing that if we pursue China for July, that means, remember, we were on this part where we had to explore other alternatives earlier this year when it looked like our trip was going to cancel. The Department of International Relations and Cooperation advised me that
in exploring, if we're going to decide now today, China, that means we cancel everything with Korea now. And if China say no, then we've got nowhere to go. They don't want to do three countries, check three countries, and then the committee choose. Because if three countries say yes, then we must go back to that country and say no. So they don't want that kind of practice. They don't encourage that kind of practice. That's what the coach explained the last time when we were also wanting to pursue. If this one don't work, can we go to that one? So then they ask me, okay, should we stop the relations now or the whatever dealings we had or negotiation with the Koreans, should that be stopped? Then I need to know, is that the decision from the committee? That was the other thing. Yeah, I think that's thing that we should consider if we make a new decision now.
Yeah, exactly. That is the thing. That's why I brought it back, because there are two things. There is no point in pursuing Saul if there are technicalities that may arise already that we can't go. The first technicality being the time slot, the second technicality being the preparedness of Saul even by that time, because they have said that they have estimated it. They have estimated that they would be ready, say, 2 weeks after our scheduled preference time. They think that they will have finished establishing their committees. So they have not said they will, it should be. They said they think that that is the time when they will finish establishing their committees, then they can host us 2 weeks after our suggested period. And now that 2 weeks is when, of course, we already are back in Parliament, the committee week is finished. And then the next lot is that week, which is also very short. It's 4 to 7. And if you remember, there are also flying days in that 4 to 7. So you may therefore look at out of the 7, 2 days or 3 days will be flying. And if it is like that, then we can't go to 2 places. We can't even think of firing Bulgaria. So that's why I want you to make up your mind so that you don't blame me if things go wrong. I know that there's a person who is ready to say, but! So that's why I want everything to be
I'm not pointed at it. Well, Chair, thank you for putting that date. But from my view, it's not a collective view. Just that. Can't we give you our mandate to pursue this matter? And then you can ask that around Robin us when things are clear, because it's very difficult to say go this direction and not that other direction. But I'm personally saying that in July is okay. Let's pursue the best in July to achieve our own objectives.
Yeah, because in July we'll have enough time even to pursue the firing to Bulgaria, which the House already agreed in principle with. You see, so the problem now is that he won't agree in September, and you can see this, even the time is small in September, we can't even attack. There are many things that can arise in September. Plus, probably even those committees in South Korea will be new, since they will still be forming up, they may not assist us because there may be many new people. You see. I am just thinking that it was better to simply abandon South Korea and simply explore China and in July, so that we know exploring China and Dubai, Bulgaria, and which the House Chair are quit about. But it's up to you. Yeah.
Based on what you have been saying and what the Secretary has just said, but the person from the international
relations that we should confine ourselves to, and we're not sure whether those people will agree based on what they've said initially.
Mm-hmm.
Let's then, I'm supporting the view that we abandon Korea completely and maybe look for another country.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I would like to support the
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So that's it. I think, therefore, explore China, check, together with now direct China and via Bulgaria China, and check even the cost. And then once you get this, you'll get the cost, then myself, I'm going to try and talk to the SP last week Monday, to the CEO, to the chairman, the chairperson of the board of SAA, if they cannot give us a good price, and we must give us different prices for that, so that the, as like last time, the lowest price, better lowest price, was the Turkish Airlines, which most of us didn't want because of you know, their safety. Lufthansa was the next better one, and SAA was the most expensive. So. But based on the committee's view that we must support our own localist leader, we can use that as a committee because there's a lot of money. We can talk to the chair, the chair of public enterprise actually works with me. We are in the same office in my constituency. I can talk to him to talk to us, to the chairman or chair or CEO, that we have this option. But once China has got now the new option, which is for China and Bulgaria, yes. Then we can talk and see if we can use SAA as a better path for the country. I think let's close it at that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Right. Sorry. I can't hear. EPC. You mean EPC?
Yeah,
they are. I don't know. I don't know what are the EPCs today?
I think it's agriculture and other.
Yeah, that is the economic transfer. Transport is in economic transfer and agriculture. So it's ours.
Vote number five is international relations, and it runs concurrently with debate about number 37, transport, is the afternoon, and then the late one, starting at 4:45, is vote four on home affairs. Not travel.
Ours is
transport. So it's not agriculture. Transport is OAC, and home affairs is also OAC, and the other one, the one on international relations, is E249.
Okay.
So I made a mistake.
As for fortunate, it means we are now finishing at 4.
Agriculture is only next one.
So
we're not finishing at 4. There's a second one.
You attend according to the club.
Oh, I see.
If it is, I attend according to the
club.
If you like, you can. But you are compulsory to attend those of your club.
Now, according to my party, it's compulsory to attend all of
them. Oh, okay. They keep a roll call of the both the parliament and party one, but in the clusters that belong to you. Because there are many,
you sit on the
committee.